Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. Where else can you listen to Big Brother House Guests, Survivor Castaways, and the Amazing Racer Racers? That's right, here at the Rad Reality Show Network, and we have so many other guests.
Tonight we're going to be talking about Survivor. Let's have a great show, guys.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, Survivor fans. My name is Jerry Garcia. Tonight is December 20th, 2012, and I want to say thank you all for being here with us tonight on the Rad Reality Show Network, our Survivor Philippines Roundtable Show finale night. We've got such a special show planned for you tonight. The host of our show, Mr. Travis Bubba Sampson, has been sick in bed with the flu, but we do believe he's going to be here tonight. We also have a couple of Survivor legends that's going to be joining us tonight. And we have many surprises for you from the cast of Survivor Philippines. So this is going to be a very fun Survivor finale show. We hope that all of you enjoy it. Co-hosting with me tonight is Mr. Paul from Minnesota. How are you doing tonight, Paul? Are you ready for the show?
You know what? I am very ready for it. I so enjoyed last night's Christmas music show, and it was one of those that we got to just sit back and enjoy. And as soon as you said the date, I'm still freaking out. 20th. Oh, my.
But, I know.
No, I am looking forward to this show, and I hope I'm busy on the switchboard.
I think you're going to be. We've invited so many from this season of Survivor, and they've been so nice about saying yes and willing to join us tonight. And I'm so excited to have, you know, so many of them join us tonight. And at last minute, you know, so close to Christmas, be willing to join us on the show. But we do have a few legends of Survivor. And I may see legends different than other people, but these are legends in my heart. People who have been honorable survivors that have done wonderful things since they were on the show, who stand out among the rest. And I want to introduce one of them, bring them up with us right now. I know you will remember this person when I say his name, and I know you will consider him a legend too. Mr. Kobe Archa from Survivor Palau, how are you?
Well, I'm pretty darn good, if that's going to be my introduction. My God, I'll call in every week.
Well, I absolutely
Kobe,
adore you.
Well, Kobe, I know... I know that Cherry had the opportunity to meet you, but I want to introduce myself to you and welcome you to the Rad Reality Show Network. I'm Paul from Minnesota, don't you know?
Oh, hello, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, I sounded more Swedish than like I was from Minnesota, but, you know, I'm not very good at accents.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so excited to have you on the show, Kobe. You have really stayed involved with the Survivor blogging and kind of, you know, just staying involved with Survivor since you were on. But you have always stayed so, so positive in everything that you do. And one of the things that touched my heart so, so deeply was you going out and being with Jen in her final 5 years of her life when she found out she had cancer. And I just want to start the show off by commending you. And, you know, I don't want to bring you down. I know that's hard.
No, you talk about it all you want, because that's not going to bring me down thinking about Jen. She was my best friend, so don't you feel bad about talking about her just because she's dead. I'm just, you know, I know it's people feel bad because they're like, oh, it's sad, and it is sad, but, you know, she's my best friend. It's awesome that you're mentioning her. You talk about her all you want.
I will say this, that we can take from an example from you as being a friend. That's the definition of friendship, how you helped with her and stood by her side. And we can take from her, from Jen Lyon, what a wonderful spirit she had in the midst of everything that she was going through right to the end. She's just a shining example of a wonderful person, a good heart and a good spirit. And maybe you may have seen it, but any time we saw her in public, we didn't see any of her saying, "No, woe is me, I'm feeling so bad,"
right,
you know, and that type of thing. And
no, that just wasn't her, that wasn't her nature. She didn't do that in private either. That wasn't Jen, you know? And that's one of the things that threw me off playing the game with her, is that she's such a sweet, nice, and beautiful person. You know, she was so strikingly gorgeous that, you know, I couldn't help in the game but to judge her, because you don't know if people are faking or not. So I thought, that bitch can't be this sweet. She can't be that pretty and that sweet. She is faking it. And then by the time the game was over, I was like, oh, my God, this is really who this person is. And that was
so
just Jen.
Awesome.
You know, she was that way until the day she left.
That's so awesome.
I would think of, go ahead.
We've got somebody in the chat room, BB Freak, is saying, Kobe, they should have brought him back for Survivor 26, Kara Mullen.
Well, I was actually asked back for the first Fans versus Favorites, and I was in a very lucky group of five or six people that was asked and then dumped 2 days before.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, 2 days before. It was, I mean, it's pretty known out there, so this isn't like a big juicy secret, but it was me, Twyla, Terry, Shane, and Yule, I think. And I'll never know if we were all just led on by a ruse, or if there was actually a plan for an all-star type thing, and then they changed their mind. I mean, I'll never really know. But
well,
I appreciate that.
It seems like they have found a theme, at least the producers feel like they need to bring back past survivors over and over again in various numbers and various configurations. And I know a lot of fans do get in the mindset of, we would like to just see, you know, all new people. It's happened on another of our favorite shows, on Big Brother. And how do you feel about that? Are you such a fan that you would like to see, you know,
Let me just talk from selfish reasons. I, of course, love this theme. No, I'm just kidding. I do kind of course. I can't help but be kind of excited that eventually they will need a gay hairdresser from Texas, since I've been the only one. But as a fan watching it, I'm really mixed. Usually I prefer when they either do all new or all old. I don't usually like it when it's half and half. And I rarely like it when it's what they did this season, but I actually ended up loving this season. But that's rare.
Oh.
Like when they brought back Boston Rob and Russell and stuff, it becomes so one-sided, and then all you see is them, and then you don't get to know the other people that are playing. So I usually don't like it, but this is one of the exceptions. I loved this season. But I usually
don't
like it.
With
like
you.
Like this last season of Big Brother with the coaches crap. I love Big Brother, but I had to turn it off. I couldn't stand it. So usually it drives me nuts.
I so agree with you. This was the exception to the rule that they brought back three really good people that just had that perfect mixture of great-heartedness. I don't know how else to say it, but they brought back three people, and they had a great cast with them.
Right.
That just melded
that
perfectly.
That is what matters. Correct. I think that's what really pulled this season through, is the casting did a great job of putting other type A personalities out there, whereas I do think the season that Rob won, they stacked it with a bunch of not type A personalities. And so that's not fun to just watch people get bulldozed, but that's just my opinion.
Right. They did have such a great cast this season, and it was nice to see that it wasn't so ugly this season.
Right.
It was a very pleasant cast to watch. They weren't so cutthroat. It was just really pleasant to watch the season not be so,
villainous.
Ugly, you know?
yeah, villainous just to be villainous. I mean, yeah,
right.
he did it for a minute when he was trying to, mix up the idol stuff just to mix it up. So he kind of was going down that road, but I agree with you. I'm glad that people were just kind of playing the game, being themselves, the ups and the downs, rather than just try to play a character on TV. I think those are the seasons I like, at least as a viewer. It seemed like this cast wasn't trying to be characters. They just happened to be characters. Instead of a season of people like, I'm on TV, watch me burn this hat, or whatever.
Right. It was like they were saying in the chat room, it's just more likable players. They weren't mean people, and that was from BB Freak. And I agree with that. They just weren't mean people. They were likable people. They were nice to watch. And you were able to watch the season without just being frustrated and wanting to turn your TV off, it was just one of the best seasons of Survivor that we've had in a long time. I think they did great on editing. It was just a really fun season to watch, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I just love this season, and I hope that they can continue to bring back, more people like they did this season. And although
have
we already
seen,
see that next season,
is
not going to be like this. So
sadly, I don't have high hopes for next season, but I hope it proves me wrong. Because like you said, it seems to be a lot of the character players.
Yeah, Kobe and Cherry, I just want to bring this up. I'm kind of doing the technical stuff on the show and talking at times as well. But if anybody that was on the switchboard, we had somebody on the switchboard that dropped off. Sometimes Blog Talk gets a little buggy and just call back. And that's all. Oh, they call back. Okay, go ahead, guys.
Ooh, nice.
Okay. And we do have the first person from Survivor Philippines.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited. I have no idea who it is.
Okay, let's bring them on and say hi. Dana, thank you so much for calling in to the Rad Reality Show tonight. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Dana, she's a fellow hairdresser.
Yes, I am. I was a big fan of yours, too.
Nice to meet you.
Good to meet you.
You're talking to Kobe Archer from Survivor Palau. I'm Cherry Garcia. You talked with Paul.
I remember. I was a super fan. I definitely remember.
You are good.
I love you.
Did they ever really address that you were a super fan? I don't really remember reading that or anything.
I don't know that they ever did say in my in any of my interviews or even asked me the question if I was a super fan. But
That's
recruit.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I felt so bad for you when they had to take you out of the game.
Oh, I was a big old crybaby, wasn't I?
Oh, no, I just felt so bad for you. I mean,
it was
rough out
there. It was killing us. That 21 days of straight rain, that was tough.
I don't know.
As bad as I did. Yeah, it was a bummer, but you know.
Yeah, when I was asked to go back for Fans versus Favorites, that's the one thing that really, when I didn't go, but when I was asked, that was the one thing that haunted me all the time was the weather. I was just like, how am I going to do that again? You know, people assume it's the food, but it's the weather.
The weather. I mean, it's just not being able to get dry. It just wears on your body and dehydrates you at a rapid pace.
Dana, it was unbelievable, the rain, and it seemed like as soon as they merged and came up with a tribe name of Dang Rain, it seemed like it finally stopped. I want to quickly interrupt because we do have one of your fellow cast members on, and she is sitting down to dinner and just wanted to just call in and say a quick hi. So, Cherry,
yes,
if you want to
bring her
up. Okay, thanks.
Abby Maria, thank you so much for calling in tonight. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm still trying to rest from the madness. It's been crazy.
Hi, Abby.
Hi, Dana. How are you, darling?
I'm doing good. How are you doing? You resting up?
I'm resting up, just, you know, getting busy with family. Family's tiring, too, so.
Aww.
Hey, Abby,
thank you so much for calling in.
Sure, no problem.
Abby,
my pleasure.
I have a quick question for you, Abby. I know you can't stay long, and I thank you for calling and just to say hi to the fans. But we did see you at the Big Brother rap party with the big old knee brace on. And
the Big Brother rap party?
Yep.
Big Brother? Yeah.
She was at the rap party, Cherry.
Wow.
Abby, how is your knee? What happened there, and has it recovered?
Yeah, it's been recovering. It's not 100% yet, but it's going to be 100% very soon. It's going to complete 6 months that I had my surgery on January 27th. So after that, hopefully everything will be 100%. But yeah, I tore my ACL on day one, and we had no idea what was wrong with it. And then when I got back into the real world, we had MRIs, and I saw doctors and everything, and they realized that my ACL was completely torn, so I had to...
And that's, like, something that no one kind of knew, even in the show, that she was struggling with her ACL the whole time while she was setting out of challenges. That was because her knee was messed up.
Wow. And
well,
see, they didn't tell
you
us any of that. You know, Jeff Probst was calling her out about, you know, sitting out of challenges, and we didn't have any idea her knee was in such bad shape.
Oh, yeah,
well, we didn't know it was that bad ourselves. I mean, you know, when I tore my ACL on the boat, you know, I lost the laterals. My knee, you know, like, was really, like, I couldn't do lateral movements. But it was fine going forward and backwards. But every time I would, like, do any lateral movements, my knee kept on I thought it was twisting it, but it was just, you know, the ACL that was torn. I didn't even know what an ACL was. I didn't know, you know, I thought that my knee just kept on twisting it, and I thought it was, like, really, really, really weird. So,
Abby,
wow.
that immunity challenge that you got the advantage on, you still had to climb those three-level obstacle course. How in the world were you able to do that with that bad knee?
I have no idea. I have
determination.
No, yeah, determination, I guess. I just really didn't want to leave. I wanted to stay there. I don't know. I don't know how it happened, but, you know, it happened. I was in pain for sure, and, you know, I just went for it. Yeah, and I took advantage. Every time, you know, like, a tribe would lose, someone from the winning tribe would have to seat a player. So I took advantage of that because I didn't want to, you know, be seen as the weakest link. So, anyway, so, yeah.
Abby, say hi to your... I'm sorry, Cherry.
Go ahead, Paul.
I'm taking over, and I shouldn't be doing that, but I'm excited to have her on. I know she can only stay a short moment. Anyway, Abby, I want you to at least, once you do hang up, say hi to your family who's sitting there waiting, and say Merry Christmas to them all from us here at the Rad Reality Show Network, and maybe you can come back some other time and stay longer.
You guys keep me posted. I would love to come back and stay longer. Any more questions?
To have you back.
Cherry, do you want to ask me anything, babe?
Yeah.
I would love to know just what the first thing you did was once you got home and was able to see your family, what was your first thing you did when you got home? What did you do that you were able to, when you finally got home, what did you do?
When I finally got home, I had to move. I was exhausted, but I was moving. I was in the process of moving, so I had to move here in L.A. first. I had to take care of that. And then I finally went up to the Bay Area to spend some time with my family. And to be completely honest with you, the only thing I wanted to do was sleep. I was so tired. I wanted to sleep so much. Yes.
Wow. I bet this has just been a complete whirlwind for you. I can't believe you had to move after having your knee in such bad shape, being through this whole whirlwind with Survivor.
Yeah, I had to move, and then I had to go, you know, I went to see my family in the Bay Area, and then I finally came back, and then the doctors gave me the ultimatum. They're like, you can't not have your knee surgery done. You have to have your knee surgery done. So I had my knee surgery done on July 27th, and that's the story.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, anyways, you guys, I really have to go. Dana, so nice to hear your voice, babe. Send me your
you
phone number
love.
Later through a Facebook message, okay? So we can
absolutely. All right, have a good dinner.
Abby, Merry Christmas to you. Thank you so much for calling in. You have a wonderful New Year with lots of blessings to you and your family, okay? And we'll have you back for another show when you can stay longer, okay?
Perfect. It's a pleasure talking to you guys. Kisses to all. Bye.
All right. Thank you so much, hon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I just sat there like a fan listening to all that. In case you couldn't tell, I wasn't going to say anything. I was like,
you
listen to a ramble. I want to hear a ramble. No, you don't need a gay guy, a Terry, and a Dana all talking at the same time with the Brazilian. It would have been way too confusing.
Kobe, next time I'm going to make sure that you get a question in.
No. It was fascinating.
She's adorable. Poor
she
thing.
Is
I
genuinely
no
a sweet girl, for sure.
I had
do
no
ask,
idea that her knee was so bad.
Yeah, I didn't either. I knew it was jacked up, but not that. That's major. I want to ask Dana, did they ever actually find out exactly what was wrong with you diagnosis-wise when you had to leave, or was it just general exhaustion, dehydration?
Well, I went to a Philippine hospital, and I stayed there for 4 days. I ran lots of little tests and stuff, and it ended up being severe dehydration. And then I got back to the States and was still not quite right. So I went back to the hospital and then found out that I did have some parasites and crud going
girl.
On. And
that's some scary
it took about
stuff
3
right
months of getting it all back to normal, but I'm ready to play again, so I'm good now. Maybe now I need to prove my point.
That, as you say, he suggested that at the finale. So, you know, if Jeff even winks at you and suggests it, you never know.
Well, now I feel like I have to go back and prove that I'm not a big old baby. I am tougher than that.
Aww.
So you never know.
You're not a baby. Those parasites are terrible. They warned me of that the whole time I was out there because I wouldn't boil my water. I kept just drinking it out of the well, and they threatened me all the time. They're like, you're going to get a parasite, and you have no idea what you're going to have to deal with.
And that's what Jeff decided to do, too, because we couldn't get a fire started because it was raining. So he's like, well, let's do the Jeff Kent filtration system. Let's filter this water through the shirt that I've worn for 12 days, and then let's all drink it. Okay, let's do that. That's a great idea.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, it's just all adding up, I guess, to a big disaster. But, you know, maybe there's a second time. Who knows?
I mean, when we saw you curled up underneath that coat.
Crying.
With a hot mess.
Laying on Penner's lap. Just.
Oh, I know. Penner was a bit of a lifesaver out there. I told him, I'm like, you know, I would have gotten you out first because you're a threat and I'm scared to play the game with you. But after that, if I would have stayed, I would have kept him. He was a saint out there to me after all that. So I'm definitely a Penner fan. He was
who I was going for to win. I tell you, it was watching the show, you know, develop and watching the editing and everything like that. You four girls with the
wow. Somebody's under arrest. No.
Sorry.
I'm getting the fun.
Go ahead. I'm outside because my daughter is at my house, and she does not understand when Daddy's doing this stuff. She wants to harass me and pull me, so I'm so sorry. I'm outside. Go
ahead. That's okay, sweetie.
I had such hopes for that four-woman alliance that lasted all of 2 seconds because...
I didn't know why the girls. I asked Dawson and Katie, I'm like, you never should put all your eggs in one basket, especially Dana's basket. Like, you have no idea. Like, I still had a backup. I was still going to go, if it wasn't going to work out the girls, I was still going to go to dinner. Like, we had a little, like, understanding. You know, we didn't have alliance, but we had an understanding where we still kind of watched out for each other. So, and I know everyone thought in the beginning, it's like, let's hone in on Pinner. And, of course, right there in the beginning, I was like, sure, absolutely, just anything that you say. But then, of course, me and the girls would go in the back and say, you know, the first one's gone is definitely Carter or Jeff. Because we were going to keep Banner just because, you know, he knows the ropes a little bit. And he could have gotten us over, I think, to the merge. So that just never showed. You know, it's that you can never make a women's alliance on Survivor. It never works out. I think Amy Cusack was the only one that managed to pull that one off.
It is hard to pull that together, and I don't know why, because the girls in our season could have done it too, and they didn't do it. I don't know why.
I know. Just girls, they get flaky sometimes at the end. They get nervous. They're like, but what happens when all the guys leave? Then who's going to build fire? I'm like, I can build fire. Forget the guys. I don't need them. I do the cooking anyways. So I think I would have had them on board, but it just never got there. So
Did you yeah. like Jeff Kent?
I did, actually, which is strange, because I didn't know anything about all the Prop 8 stuff until after I got home. But, you know, there, like, you know, I was born in Arkansas, and he was kind of a country guy. We had a lot of things in common. He was a hard worker around camp, and I totally respected Jeff Kent in the game. Like, I respected him, but in the same sense, his social game was just crap. Like, he didn't have a great social game, really. He's a little moody sometimes, which should have let me know that he was probably somebody. You know, he's already acquired that mood, but he's a great guy. I mean, really, this whole cast, you know, and I didn't really get to meet a lot of them until just last week in L.A. at the reunion, and so crazy for all of us to be sitting in the green room, and genuinely just, like, getting all of us just getting along so well. Like, it was a great cast.
You know,
there's not a lot of, you know, crazy people.
You know, I'm a huge Survivor fan, and I have never in my life thought about that you having to get medevaced out, you don't get the bonding of hanging out with the cast when you get voted out. I had never thought about that before.
Well, see, pre-jury, they took us to Malaysia before the jury ever showed up. So, and you know, you spend those first 2 weeks just kind of staring at each other like you can't talk. So we really never got to know each other until afterwards. So
wow.
They're all awesome. Hey, we all had a good time together.
Dana, because you didn't get to spend that much time with everybody and, you know, all the Ponderosa and all that type of thing, as a fan watching this season unfold, did the final vote surprise you, or did you figure that it would go that way?
I kind of figured that it would go that way, just doing the numbers and seeing, you know, how the challenges were going. I was pretty sure Malcolm was going to be in the final three, too. I didn't know that it would be Lisa. I thought it would be Scoop and Malcolm and Denise. So I was pretty surprised, actually, right until that point, when we were doing rehearsals and they were going back and forth, and I was like, I wonder, I think Lisa might be in it, you know? Like, then I was starting to kind of put it together, but I wasn't sure in the beginning. So it kind of had us all surprised.
Same question to you, Colby. Were you surprised or on the final
vote? Was I surprised on what?
The final vote.
No, only because being a savvy fan of the show, you know, it was just mentioned so many times that Lisa and Scoopin would not win. In my heart, I wanted them to win because that's who I was rooting for. I love Denise too, though. But
I love Scoopin too. You know, he keeps in touch the most, and I really wanted
him
too because he's a way awesome guy and totally sweet guy.
Yeah,
I was afraid everyone wasn't going to give him his votes.
Yeah, and watching the show, I mean, it was just said a million times that neither one of them would win. So I just know that usually if the producers keep ramming that at you, that there's probably a reason.
And, you know, I think Denise got a lot of respect because she did go to every single tribal. So I think, you know, it's a lot of respect for someone that's done something like that and they've stayed in the game every single vote out. Like, that was pretty awesome. And she's, you know,
when I think Lisa... Lisa's major downfall is that Lisa kind of did what I did. She played her game to the cameras instead of the rest of the players. So I think I think once they watched it on TV, I think they realized how hard Lisa played. But when they were out there, they really had no idea.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. But it always goes the way it's going to go. Poor Lisa.
Right.
But she did win the fan favorite, so.
Right. When Denise seems awesome, so I'm glad she won, too.
Yeah, she killed it in challenges.
God,
and
she's
I
incredible,
tough
right?
To go, so.
I'm still confused, though, of an 8-member jury. That just totally threw me.
Okay, well, it throws me, too. And then what else I don't get now when they have 3 people at the end, but somebody explained to me that then they're both second, is like, yeah, if Lisa only got 1 vote and Mike only got 1 vote, well, who's second and who's third? Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now,
because pay-wise, like, how do they get paid?
That's what
second
I
makes more than, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I guess if Mike calls, we can ask him. I doubt he'll tell us. But I wonder what the president says for that. Where that, you know, I don't know. It just seems odd.
Yeah.
Cherry, are you still awake?
Pardon me?
I said, are you still awake? You just hadn't said anything in a while, girl. I was making sure you were awake.
Cherry sometimes is multitasking in the background.
I am multitasking in the background.
Oh, I called you out on it.
I'm sorry. It's okay.
I'm wrapping Christmas presents at the moment, so I'm doing the same thing.
I'm hiding in my car. My daughter. Go ahead.
I kept thinking, okay, this year it's going to be a final two that would make a 9-member jury, and I don't know, it just threw me. They never really addressed it.
And they switched it up with the 3 tribes, so it kind of, you know, put the balance out a little bit. Which I think made it kind of a little bit of a different season, having 3 tribes. You know, they brought it back for one more chance, and I think it worked out. I personally don't want to go back to a 3 tribe, but it seemed to work out for the season.
I think it's interesting. I've suggested, you know, they don't listen to me, which is fine, but as a super fan, I thought that they should do like a tribe edition of All Stars and bring like 4 or 5 tribes back that were very winning, like the most winningest tribes, and then have them do a challenge in the opening and wipe out a whole tribe. So like if there's 5, four tribes to 5 people or whatever, and whoever comes in last, that whole tribe doesn't even get to play.
Wow.
Huh.
Wouldn't that be crazy? And then start with like 4 tribes of 5 or something like that.
That would be crazy.
That would mess up the alliance for sure.
Yeah, totally. Especially with the, you know, when people return, they need to be messed up a little.
So how do you guys think? Do you think you have an idea of who this next cast is and how it's all going to go, or?
Yeah, girl. Do you not Google?
No, of course
not.
Do you not know who your cast is on?
Before Kobe announces who he
no, I'm not gonna announce.
Knows, I even, when they do the little bit about the next season and they give that really quick little thing, I saw these pictures flashing. I took my DVR and I did click one frame at a time to see the pictures of those people.
Other people did that, too.
And none of them are going to be on it? Is that true, Kobe?
No, none of them. I mean, from what I'm being told, I mean, I'm not concrete, but I mean, the names that are out there that say that is the cast, I've heard those names for a really long time, so I think that is the cast.
Yeah. Well, it'll be exciting to watch.
Do you know who from your season is on there?
Maybe. It's been talked about, but I don't know for sure. But it's definitely been talked about that someone from our cast is going to be on the next
season. But I don't want to just spoil it. I don't know how these...
Right, yeah, I don't want to spoil it.
How you people roll on here, but yeah.
It makes people mad sometimes when you spoil it for them, so I'll let it be a surprise.
Right.
Wow. I don't know.
We
know that most people have already seen the cast, I think.
Right.
Well,
I don't mind cast getting spoiled, but I don't want to be spoiled how far people get. Fans assume that I want to know that, and sometimes they'll just send it to me, and I'm like, I don't want to know. Don't tell me how they do. So I actually found out the final 3 of this season like 2 weeks before because some fans said, well, you know, blah, blah, blah is the final 3.
Yeah,
like,
I know. That social media.
I know.
It used to not be like that. It used to, everyone would have to watch the show, you know, to find out, but it's so easy to find out the results now.
Right.
But
that just spoils my enjoyment, you know, of trying to figure out who is going to, you know, I don't like that kind of thing. Now, if I heard who is the returning cast members, to me, personally speaking, that doesn't spoil the season for me because it has
no, that doesn't, that doesn't matter to me either. I just don't want to know who goes out first, second. You know, I don't want to know who gets voted out. I want to watch the order myself.
Yeah, the only time that changed for me was Heroes versus Villains, and that's just because I knew so many people that were playing that I will admit with that I did kind of go ape crazy, and I really had to find out how everybody did because I thought if Tom Westman wins this damn thing, I'm going to lose my mind, so I had to look it up.
Yeah, I think, you know, the spoilers are out there, but we won't, you know, because there is a lot of people that don't want to know, and so...
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it either.
You know, it's
we'll
announced.
We'll be respectful.
Yeah, we won't throw it out there and ruin anybody's Christmas. I don't want to go that far.
Well, guys, I got to go do some more Christmas shopping.
Okay, well, Dana, thank
you
so much.
You mentioned the word Christmas, and everybody that needs to shop freaks out. I me as well.
Humbug. I know, I just got back from L.A., and I'm like, got to do it fast.
Would you do some shopping for me, too, Dana?
Oh, I don't know. I'm kind of over it myself.
My daughter needs a Barbie mansion, Dana. She needs a Barbie mansion, so go handle that for me.
Well, reminder that I sat in the back row at the reunion, so...
Hey, you know what? So many of these reunions, before you head off here, you just brought up something. So many of these reunion shows, and the whole cast is there, and I'm sitting there waiting for, you know, somebody, you know, to ask a question of everybody, and they seem to always leave everybody out. I did tally,
yeah.
And every one of you this time got asked a question.
Yeah, Jeff Probst said that in rehearsals. He's like, so I'd really like to get to every single person, so don't get stuck up on your answer and yourself. He's like, speak it quickly so everybody gets a chance to say a little something. Which is nice for everyone
nice.
To just kind of say their piece and have their closure. I like that.
Right. Was it surprising
nice
to you that there was two people that actually had some notoriety before they came on the show that was on Survivor, being Lisa Welchel and Jeff?
Well, you know, I didn't know who either one of them were until I got back, and I should have known who at least Lisa Welchel was. I mean, I was a huge Facts of Life fan growing up, you know, and I had no idea. Like, I knew she looked really nice and really familiar, but I had no idea that that's who it was. And then, you know, and then I met her, and she's such a real person, and I don't know. She's a really sweet woman. I like Lisa a lot.
She seems like such a sweetheart. But it just seemed like being out there on Survivor, if you knew who they were, I would be so shocked to see people of such notoriety, you know, out there playing Survivor. It, you know, it would just shock me, you know.
Yeah, the ones that don't need the money.
right, exactly.
Yeah,
I know. Just, it, you know, in a way you see it as a shock that they would put themselves in that position, but then in another way it's kind of frustrating that, you know, you have people out there that really, really need the money, and, you know, Jeff Kent has, as he's said so often, I've made $60 million, and he's out there playing Survivor, you know, against people who could really use the money, and... So there's, you know, a few different ways to look at it, but I think it would just shock me at first to see, you know, people who've been in the public eye for so long out there in the jungle, you know?
Yeah, I think I have more respect for people that are a fan of the show and that truly want to be on the show because they want to see if they can, you know, do that challenge, and I think I respect that the most, you know, that they've seen the show and they know what it's about. They know what a strategy is and they know how to, you know, put it all together. I kind of like that. Like, as soon as Russ, Stupin, and Pinner walked up, like, you know, I'm such a huge fan of the show. Like, I already knew who they were. I kind of knew their game. And I was so happy to get Pinner because I was already a fan of Pinner's and I kind of knew what he was about, which made me a little leery at first to you know, be in his alliance. But, you know...
I think they brought back three really good people. And
me too.
I was really happy to see the people that they brought back. And
I was so happy with, like, the final three. I mean, they were all really good people. You know, they're all well-deserved. They all three played a really good game. And, you know, Lisa's game in the beginning, I think, was more of a battle with herself and the game.
I agree.
I think she really kicked it in, you know, at the end. And, you know, she stayed out there. So, tough woman.
Dana, did you like or dislike what the final four said during your memory walk about you?
You know, I was so nervous. I'm not even sure that I really remember exactly. I was just glad my torch wouldn't land on the ground. I didn't really care what they said. I was just glad that the torch was standing up where it should be. That's all I could remember. Like, please don't say that I quit. Like, I barely remember you guys even being out there. I just needed someone to save me for a minute.
When did you tape? Because when the four talk about the individuals, then they switch to a piece by that person and by you. When did you actually tape that? Was it recently or a long time ago?
No. So for the reunion, you know, we watched the torch thing that right before the live show actually came on. We were all in the green room watching the 2-hour finale. And then they were getting people ready, you know, in the studio while we were watching the finale. And then they brought us out there for the reunion afterwards. So that was the first time that I'd seen that. So it was kind of a surprise to all of us, you know. But I was pretty happy with it, you know, and just said some nice things as far as, you know, maybe I'll get a chance. So
he gave you good attention on the finale, so that's good.
Yeah, and he doesn't let people that he thinks quit come back, so... And he, you know, and he told me, like, he knew how sick I was. So at least that point got across, because I think my family knows me enough to know, you know, I'm pretty much like scooping when it comes to getting hurt and challenges because I'm so crazy and out there. And I just felt like I was so sick I couldn't really get that across to people. So, yeah, maybe one day. Do it again.
That would be awesome.
All right,
to see that out there. Well, thank you so much. We'll let you continue your shopping and your wrapping and preparation for Christmas. We appreciate you calling in so very much. I know we've got a few other survivors that will be calling in throughout the night. But I want to thank you so much. And perhaps we'll have you call back in another time when we can spend more time with you. But I hope you have a wonderful holiday season and a wonderful new year filled with a lot of blessings for you. And
absolutely.
We do hope that we see you on Survivor again.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure talking to all of you. Y'all have a good holiday.
Thank you,
Dana.
You take care, hon.
Stay strong.
Bye. Oh, yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well,
she is a real sweetheart.
She is sweet. Yeah, I liked her a lot.
Speaking of Christmas, again, Colby, you mentioned in your blog for, you know, celebrating the 40th birthday and talking about Jen, how she would show up and sing Christmas carols to you. We had a big show last night of all sorts of Christmas songs, and it was a really fun show. I'm just curious, did she have any favorite that you remember? Or?
That is a good question. No, she just liked the whole general Christmas cheer. I don't know how much y'all know about her, but on the her last Christmas here, she actually opened a Christmas tree lot in the middle of L.A.
Yes, I saw a local station actually covered that, and it's on YouTube, so I did see that piece.
Yeah, so she sold Christmas trees. It wasn't a huge success, we'll be honest, because it was in the middle of L.A. You know, that was always Jen. Her heart was just in the right place, you know, even if God love her forever. So she was selling trees in the middle of L.A. But it was super sweet. And like I said, she just wanted to make people smile. She didn't even care if it was a big success. She just wanted to be surrounded by Christmas and be happy and see other people happy. So it was really, you know, I love that story. And I love that it wasn't even successful. You know, it's easy to be all smiling and be like, oh, great, she made all this money for cancer. Well, not really, but her heart was in the right place. And I think that's almost even sweeter, to see somebody go out there and try and try and put that smile on even when they're not doing gangbusters. You know, that was just Jen.
How sweet. She sounds like she had the sweetest heart, and you know, it's one of those people I wish we all could have known her.
She was very accepting, that's for sure. That's the main thing I learned from Jen. You know, I don't think I ever heard her say a bad word about anybody, ever, in the whole time I knew her. And there was plenty of times she could have been mad at me because I'm the world's biggest a-hole at times. And, you know, she always loved me for me and never judged me. And that's one of the things that I really, really appreciate about her friendship.
Tell me,
yeah,
how
those friendships just will always remain in your heart. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the guy that started this show, Ron Rad, was a very dear friend of mine and Paul's. And he was kind of the same way. Everybody loved him. He was very accepting of everyone and just had the biggest heart in the world. And, you know, both of them have now passed on. And we remember them, you know, at times like this and with a smile on our heart because we were able to have them in our lives. And,
right.
you know, that lucky for us that we were able to have them in our lives. We're mm-hmm. so lucky for those moments, you know, those times that we were fortunate enough to have them with us. So, you know, we're very, very gifted, you know, just fortunate to have someone in come into our lives for whatever time.
Correct.
They are
it's
able to
rare.
Share with
it's
us.
It's rare to have people that good come in your life, that's for sure.
Right.
Very rare.
So,
you also, you know, we're talking about the fundraiser that you were putting together. How did that go?
It went great. It was quite the little risque thing here in my little Smalley's, Texas town. We have a beautiful theater that we've redone in our downtown, and I decided to put on a burlesque, Broadway, one-man type show, intermixed with stories of Jen, and her whole family came. And so I showed videos of her on Survivor, that one that you were talking about with the Christmas trees, and it kind of interlaced the story with happy and sad and making people laugh. And we raised $11,000 for a local cancer clinic here in town, all in her name. So that was great. It was awesome.
And that helped
we
them with gas
out.
Cards and with
yeah, the way
things
we set
to help
up,
them pay for their
yeah,
their
we wanted the
money
to
pay for their insurance for
correct.
For
so
their
they're going to help. Yeah, they're going to help a lot of people with just different needs. With each particular person, they want to be able to help them meet different needs rather than just one particular need. Jen's dream before she died is what she wanted to do was make totes, like little bags that they could give you for when you're diagnosed, when you go to your first cancer chemo treatment. And she wanted it to have like maybe some home remedies in it and like just a very comforting thing because, once again, that's just Jen. See, I mean, that screams her. Aww. She's heartfelt and sweet. And I tried to make that happen, but when you're talking about it and trying to fulfill that, you know, it's such a sweet thing, but it's kind of hard to get off the ground. So I was very torn to not try to make her dream come true, but then I knew that she would also just be really happy knowing that I was helping a lot of people for her, even if it wasn't her original thought.
$11,000 goes
yeah.
so far when you're paying deductibles for insurance. You know, that
right.
is something that is such a big thing for somebody who's facing, you know, cancer and, you know, just to pay that deductible and,
yeah.
you know, just being able to have gas in the car to go see the doctor, things like that that you're paying for out of that $11,000 helps numerous people, Kobe, and I know that she is so proud of what you've done.
Well, thanks. Now you're going to get me choked up. You can get me choked up. That's okay.
Kobe, for
ahead,
our
Paul.
Listeners that don't know, that event was like in the first week of this past September.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still accepting donations?
You know, to be honest, I don't know if we are because I don't think we are. But what I would say to anybody that wants to participate who hears this story is hopefully I will make it an annual event and I will do it again next year and people can look out for the website then. Because the website's up now, but since the clinic was in charge of where the donations went, I can't say if they still have it up and I'm not sure. Because, you know, they're very tricky with money that way. So trust me, I never touched the money. It went straight to the clinic. So.
Right.
Just keep your eye out in case I do it next year because I probably will. That's what I'm thinking. If
well,
I can help somebody with that much money again, that would be a darn shame if I didn't get up there and do it. So
absolutely.
I think I'm going to do it again.
That would be awesome, Toby.
From hearing other people that launch these kind of events, and they do it the first year, it's a process. The second year gets better. The third year gets better. I mean, just keep plugging away, and I'm sure it will get easier, and you learn things every time. Of course, Jillian, I think her first season of the Reality Rally, she had so much help.
That woman puts on an empire. She's like the Martha Stewart of fundraising. She makes me sick. She is so good at what she does. I am jealous, jealous, jealous. She's amazing what she puts together. I'm trying to go this year, but, you know, things are so busy. But I'm going to try to go this next year. It's amazing what that woman puts together. Hats off to her.
Yeah, she is another special. There's so many special people that have come out of Survivor that do take the time to give back, and it's a testament to those people and the casting, I guess, but it's also, I think, as I've heard many past Survivor castaways talk about, very often their time on Survivor has been a life-changing experience, and it launches them into doing so many other things. What do you think?
I agree, for sure. I mean, besides just the experience motivating you, the people that you meet. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't have met Jen without Survivor, so there's proof of that.
Yep.
It can be frustrating to me, you know, just in a selfish way, because there are so many good survivors that do so much good. It does irritate me at times that, you know, only the Russell Hanses are celebrated. And, you know, it seems like, especially with the producers and stuff as of late, they just really want to glorify the meanness of Survivor. And there's that part of the game, but I don't think Survivor is just a mean game, as y'all have pointed out with this season. You know, you can have good people play it, and sure, there's a little bit of backstabbing, but it doesn't have to be the world's ugliest game. So I do wish that they would
And, you know, at the top of the show, I talked about, you know, bringing on legends, and I talked about, you know, having nice people and people who are of that good caliber, the caliber of honor, and that's the kind of people that we wanted to have on the show tonight, and we have someone coming on the switchboard right now that I want to introduce that I just can't wait to bring on. He is one of the legends of Survivor that I believe you know and are familiar with, and I'm so excited to have him on the show. I'm going to bring him up right now. Mr. Michael Scoopin, thank you so much for calling in tonight. How are you?
I'm good, Cherry Baby. Do they have that song, that theme song, Cherry Baby, back from the 60s? Is that the Ron Red theme song?
I don't have that theme song on my switchboard, but we are so excited to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm a sweating fool right now. I just got done with an hour and a half of basketball, so I smell like I did on the island.
We are so excited to have you on tonight. You're on with Kobe Archa and myself and Paul from Minnesota. You just missed Dana and you missed Abby Maria. But
oh, my gosh, I timed that pretty good.
You better be glad you called, period. I was about to get pissed. I was like, where
Kobe,
is
he? Baby. Kobe, my
I was
man.
Gonna kill
that's
you. Oh, please.
You are the legend, man.
I love Mike Scoopin. I've loved him for years.
It is a mutual love fest, Mr. Archa.
I know. How
you
did
are,
you even first really get connected? I don't even remember. I mean, besides the Survivor stuff, but I really don't remember the first time we talked. Was it the Darfur thing, or I don't
know. It's been so many years and so many events. I mean, I am so old school. I remember Survivor when it was still in diapers. I mean, we didn't even know how to play the game. Blindside hadn't even been existed yet. I mean, when I did Survivor, there wasn't Twitter, there wasn't Facebook, there wasn't even text messaging.
Wow.
Wow.
You're really old.
No, I was just really young when I did it, so I'm just still a little spring chicken. Don't let that gray fool you out there.
Oh, I love your gray, but we're not going to get into that.
So Abby Maria, I called her the day we got home, and I said, Abby, you were absolutely the most miserable human being I've ever spent 39 days with. And she said, Scoop, I was trying to win $1 million. And I said, fair enough. And she owned it, and I have been great friends with her. I, you know, went out to California. We went out, you know, and she's actually a lot of fun. I mean, I can take her, even in small doses and big doses back home. She's a very different person. But out there,
right.
Her edit was spot on.
Oh, that's miserable.
We could see it. We could see it. I mean, it seemed like you guys were certainly having no fun at camp with the Abby Maria at camp.
Yeah, and you know what? It almost, you know, I think when I look back on it, you know, probably the biggest criticism that I received in the game was, why didn't I take Abby to the end? And you know what?
Right.
I think, you know, first of all, when Malcolm had two idols at fifth place, and I asked him what he was going to do with them, and he sort of just hemmed and hawed and changed the subject and kind of talked around, and kind of flippantly as he was just walking away, he said, I'll just probably give it to Denise. And I ran right over to Lisa. I ran right over to Lisa, and I said, if we drop two votes on Denise tonight, they won't count. They're going to put two votes on Abby Maria, and she's going to go home anyway, and we're going to blow up the alliance. I said, we will lose control of the game. Right now we have control of the game. But if you think about it, that and Malcolm holding on to that idol is what cost him $1 million. Because that was the point where he blew his trust in his day one alliance with Denise.
Right.
And that's the moment that she walked over to us and said, I'm in with you guys. That's the moment it changed.
That makes sense with Abby, though. I hadn't thought about that. I'm so glad you cleared that up.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, people don't look past it. Malcolm had two idols. Well, of course he would give it to his, you know, lifelong alliance from day one.
Right.
I fully expected. When he didn't give her that idol, I went, there is trouble in paradise.
Exactly. I think we were all shocked that he didn't give it to her.
Yeah, especially her. I mean, she even said, you know, let's force a tie or do what... She was willing to build a fire
She was really willing to sacrifice herself. I thought that was stupid, too. He's still in danger. But as he said, he wanted to go home and take it to his mom so she could put it on the mantle. That's what he said.
Yeah, it cost him $1 million. Now,
it's a million-dollar mantelpiece.
And it's not like he was running away with challenges. He won two immunity challenges. I won two immunity challenges. He won one reward challenge. I won one reward challenge. So, I mean, we were tied up in challenge. So it's not like, you know, he even said on one of the blogs that he was surprised at how poorly he did in challenges. And I don't think he did poorly, but he certainly wasn't running away with anything.
Right. So here's my big question to you. The one thing that you did that I couldn't do is that you kept your crazy sidekick in check. My crazy sidekick went crazy and quit. Her name was Janu, which is why I named my daughter that. Your crazy sidekick, somehow you kept her to not quit and to stay in the game. How did you do that, Mr. Scoopin?
You know, from day one, you know, when I discovered who she was and I told her and I basically said to her what Dawson should have said to Jeff Kent, she probably would have made it to the final three had she said this. You know, basically, you know, and I didn't have to use these words, but it was basically, as long as we're together, your secret is safe with me. You know, but don't think about straying, you know. But we had an understanding, a trust from day one. We voted differently on occasion just to throw everybody off.
Right.
You know, people would say, I thought Lisa and Mike were in alliance. What in the hell? What happened? They voted differently. I said, don't sit next to me, don't talk to me, don't sleep next to me, don't offer me water, don't even give anybody any clue that we're in an alliance. and they downloaded everything to her when they were against me. They downloaded everything to me when they were against her. People said, how can Lisa play such a crazy game and her name never get brought up to get voted off? And I said, her name got brought up all the time. But I diffused it. I diffused it because I had a lock sure vote.
Because you're a drama queen is how you diffused it. You are drama.
You're brilliant is what you are.
And you know what? I tell you. You know, everybody that makes it to the end talks about what a brilliant game they played. I rolled the dice as much as everybody else. You know, when Penner and I, the classic example is when Penner and I negotiated over that wicker ball for the rice. You know,
yes.
It happened to be a brilliant negotiation for me because they didn't eat for 2 days. Now, if they went back and caught fish, it would have been a brilliant negotiation for Penner. You know, so I rolled the dice, and I rolled the dice like that because Penner said, let's give him the rice. I'll just go back and catch fish. And Carter slips and says, Penner, we haven't caught a single fish in 2 weeks. So I thought, thank you, Carter, for that information. So I rolled it, and, you know, I didn't think they would catch a fish. The weather was crazy terrible. We were on an overfished coral reef. You know, they didn't catch fish for 2 days. The next challenge we compete in, we out-energized them in a lacrosse challenge, and we won immunity again. So, I mean, it turns out that it was a great decision for me, but only because Penner didn't catch fish. So, you know, every decision is a gamble out there. No matter who you vote off or who you trust, everything's a gamble. So my gambles maybe were more calculated and they just paid off. But it's not, you know, there are other people out there that were making great moves, but they just didn't roll the dice effectively. So,
hey,
I mean,
here,
you know, Kobe.
I have a surprise guest I'm about to plug into the show, too, much to Paul and Cherry's chagrin. So here, wait 1 second.
Hi.
Tell me who it is.
It's Janu.
Hi, Janu.
Wow. That's a blast from the past there, girl. You're almost old school.
Hi, Mike Scoopin.
You're like mid-school. You're like middle school.
I'm Survivor.
It's good to have you.
Hey, you got to go to bed, and I'm going to be out here doing radio.
You're so cute, Janu.
How
old
are
you?
That is great. That's our future Survivor, right?
How old are you, Janu?
I gotta go. I'm 7.
You're 7?
Daddy's on my case.
You're adorable.
Go in and go to bed. She found me in my car. Damn children. How does Mike Scoopin put up with 7 of those running around? I can't even keep one in check.
Isn't that funny? I got a 7-year-old too, so she's right. I'm right there with you, brother. I know
such
those 7-year-olds.
They are after it. Now I was going to ask you something else. Now I forgot what it was. Because my child threw me off my game. Cherry, you ask a question.
Let's see. Gosh, I have so much that I want to ask Mike Scoopin. Oh, my gosh. What did you think? First of all, did you know who Jeff Kent was?
Nobody did. It turned out, besides Dawson, when she left, her secret died. And even when the 11 final members, the jury and the final three, all flew home on the plane together, Dawson was on the other plane, and he told Carter, because he kind of buddied up to Carter, and he didn't talk to any of us on the way home. I mean, not even a syllable. He told Carter when they would go off at different airports, because it was, you know, a half a dozen airports before you got home, he said, you're going to read about me. Google my name when you get home. I know I told you that I had an 80-acre ranch, but my ranch is many hundreds of acres. And I know I told you I did this, but I really do something else. And all he did was allude to the fact that he did other things, but he never even told Carter. So when he got back, first of all, you know, Dawson starts spilling the beans, but Carter Googled his name, and there he was.
OMG. Wow.
And I'm a baseball junkie. I'm a sports junkie. It was just so out of context to have him out there, and his facial hair started growing in. He wore cowboy boots and a cowboy hat, and he had straw hanging out of his mouth and played this big rancher boy up so much. And he wasn't on my tribe.
Right.
You know, so it by the time the game was merged, it was 17 days in, and, you know, by that time he had a full beard and he just looked a lot less like Jeff Kent than he did on day one.
Well, and then, too,
right.
Do you think it probably threw you off that Lisa was there and you knew she was famous, and so it probably you probably thought, well, they're not going to take two famous people out here.
You know, I didn't even think about another famous person. I mean, I looked at everybody, I talked to everybody, and he wasn't any special thing in challenges. He took off his shirt and he was nothing special to look at. I mean, you would never, you know, you would just never think that he was a
right.
world-class athlete, you know?
So how shocked were you when you saw Lisa out there?
I mean, I recognized Lisa instantly. Lisa and I do similar things for a living. So not only did I recognize her from her days on the show, because she very much still looks a lot like the girl that played Blair, but we're both speakers. We both traveled the globe speaking. So I've never shared a stage with her before, but I knew who she was and I know what she did, and, you know, I was familiar with her. So I recognized her as soon as I got on the boat.
And did y'all pray
every day?
And did y'all pray every day?
Did they put us on the same tribe? But, you know, Jeff Probst said that he put Penner and Pent on the same tribe because he thought they would form a very tight alliance and be able to really, really play a very offensive strategic game.
Well, that
sure
didn't play out very well.
No.
Not at all.
Yeah. Did you and Lisa pray every day? You know, they didn't show, because I know you're both Christian and I respect that. So I kept waiting the whole season. I was like, when are they going to show them pray? They have to be praying all the time. I'm assuming, were you praying in the beginning and they just didn't show it like they did towards the end?
No.
They seemed to focus
no.
on that at the end.
No, because of how prayer has been used as a strategic tool on Survivor. You know, hey, let's go pray with the Christian. Maybe he'll
right.
vote with us. Or,
right.
coach having an immunity idol in his pocket and then praying with his tribe to find the immunity idol, you know. So it just doesn't edit well on Survivor, you know, the prayer
right.
thing. And, you know, it's an interesting thing because, you know, Jeff Probst says, you know, it's hard to act like an angel on a show created by the devil. It's you know, in a game about lying and cheating and backstabbing and betrayal and blindsides, you know, it just is, it's sort of, I don't know, it just doesn't seem right to sit and pray and then go lie to somebody's
right.
face.
It can come
so,
across as hypocritical is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually the word that I was looking
watching.
For. So Lisa said, I want to pray with you every day, but it edits so poorly out here. She said, we have to figure out a way to pray. And I said, we'll find a way. So we were on an island about the size of a football field. And we were all on three separate islands, and the challenges were all on separate islands. And, you know, so every time we went to tribal council or a challenge, it was about an hour-long boat ride. You know, the boats couldn't go very fast. They were small little boats, and, you know, the waves were usually pretty choppy. So on this boat ride, I squeezed her shoulder. She always sat next to me. And we sort of got in this underground cabin on this boat, and we kind of laid down. And when I squeezed her shoulder, that was my sign that we were going to pray together. And so every time I squeezed her shoulder, she reached out and squeezed my leg. Like, I got it. You know, she was responding to the cue. And I thought we were praying together. Basically an hour on the way to the challenges and an hour back. And you would do a lot of thinking and strategizing and praying. And I prayed for each one of my kids by name and each one of her kids by name and prayed for every single contestant, every single contestant's family. And, you know, it's just sort of therapeutic to do that, you know, while you're in this boat ride. And afterwards, we're doing an interview together after the show's over. And they asked us about that same question. And Lisa said, I never prayed one time out there. I looked at her and said, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, you and I prayed every single day for 2 hours together. She's like, when did we pray? I never prayed once for you. I said, oh, my gosh, when I squeezed your shoulder on the boat. It's funny, this story's never been told. And she said, I didn't understand why you were squeezing my shoulder. I just squeezed back because I thought that I wanted to, like, it's like saying hi and saying hi back.
And oh, so my she, God.
That is hilarious.
She said, I am so sorry. I feel so bad because you prayed for me every day. I never prayed for you. I never prayed for your kids. So I said, don't worry. I think I had it covered for both of us. We were good.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, Scoop, I've got a couple questions, and one includes Lisa. You four returnees were on the talk just before the premiere, and Lisa made a comment that she had even gone out and made a T-shirt that said she had won a triathlon or something like that. I looked for it the whole season and never saw it.
She wore that shirt, allegedly. I never saw it. She either wore it at Ponderosa before the game was played, because you get on in the Philippines about 5 days, somewhere between 5 and 10 days, a cast gets there before the game starts. There's a lot of prep that we do before the show. So the three returnees were in three separate villages. And the 15 new players were in one village all by themselves. I think it was Ponderosa. No, it wasn't Ponderosa. It was a place they called the Orphanage because it was one big, giant place. And they said that, like, kids left when they got there. So they used to call it the Orphanage. So it was either then that she wore the shirt during the 5 days that we were there before the game started, or it was during the final interviews in L.A. when they were all together. But it wasn't in the game at all.
Wow, because a lot of people did look for that shirt.
Yeah, I never saw it because it was never in the game. I mean, you only got what you were wearing, and then they delivered on day about 3 or 4 or 5. They delivered our bathing suits, and they delivered a pair of running shoes. We got to select a pair of challenge shoes to offset the, you know, the business-type shoes that we typically wear into the game.
Somebody in the chat room just said that she said that she wore the shirt during sequester before the game started.
Okay. Yeah, that's the 5 days, yeah. So nobody ever said anything about it. It never came up. It didn't help anybody to think she was an athlete. I mean, it was pretty obvious what her athletic ability was on day one. So, I mean, it didn't work for anything, but, you know, maybe – you know, it didn't outperform in the Lions.
Listen, Scoopin', you old fart. You really
showed
your
old fart.
Because I'm an old fart. I was so impressed with your athletic ability, and I only can assume that you live your life in, you know, constantly exercising or something, because you really showed a lot in all those athletic competitions, and I just want to say I was very impressed at that. And the reason I brought up old fart was also because, here's a trivia, I don't know the answer to this, I'm just curious, was this the oldest final three on Survivor?
I'm told it was. I know there's one other final three that was close, but
Thailand.
I bet it was
Thailand, because that was Clay and them, right? That was an old finals, wasn't it?
Yeah, Clay, Brian, and who was the other one?
It wasn't Helen. Wasn't it the crazy lady, or was it Helen? I don't remember. Wasn't it the blonde lady that was crazy that talked to Dan, that kept burying the dead bats or something?
No, I don't remember her name. You're right. I think it was Helen.
But, well, and I would also like to compliment you on your physique, and I would like to thank CBS for all the close-ups of your pecs. And that final challenge when they were showing your hand, squishing that ball or whatever in the things, when Malcolm's hands were shaking, they kept showing your happy trail, and then they'd show Malcolm's happy trail. It was a very good editing system for me.
Well, you know, I have 7 kids, and I coach many of their sports. And, you know, I play basketball twice a week. I don't spend any time in the gym, but I spend a lot of time on the football field, the basketball court, and the hockey rink. And I coach, and so I have to be able to show the kids what to do. So I've coached all the way up into high school sports, and so I just, you know, everybody has their thing, you know, whether it's knitting or internet or whatever your hobby is, you know. My hobby is just sports. I mean, I like watching it. I like playing it. I like, you know, just everything about it, coaching it, you know, playing with my kids in the backyard. You know, we got to L.A., and one morning we got up and we hiked to the top of the Hollywood sign, which if you've never done that before, it's a ways up, a very steep hill. And my seven-year-old girl, about three-quarters of the way up, she's like, Dad, you know. And I said, honey, there's never been a seven-year-old girl to make it to the top of the Hollywood sign on their own. You've got to make it. She goes, really, Dad? I'm like, really? And Denise had walked up to the top of the sign with her nine-year-old, but her nine-year-old had to be carried partway up. So, you know, my little seven-year-old just made it to the top, and, you know, I used, you know, Denise's, you know, maybe she just decided to pick her little girl up earlier than that, but, yeah, she made it all the way up and all the way down on her own, and it's just what we do. And, you know, I'm blessed that I don't get injured, you know, I mean, I do get injured, but never.
Sorry.
Never. Yeah.
Speaking of injured,
my injuries just were more camera friendly than everybody else's.
Oh, please.
How surprised were you when Probst handed you those busted up diving goggles at finale?
Oh, that was hilarious. You know, I've gotten souvenirs from both seasons. I actually, that when that pole snapped on my back in Survivor 2, I ended up getting that. I looked at Burnett and I said, Burnett, I want those poles. And he never said a word about it, but 3 months later they showed up at my front door in this gigantic package.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
I bet you were floored.
It. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. So I got a souvenir. And do you know what I took out of this game? I actually smuggled my machete that I used all season long.
Oh, my gosh. How did you get that out?
I have no idea. Because it's a long machete.
Yeah, it is.
And I smuggled that sucker out. I have no idea how it made
it out.
How did
you get it through all those airports?
you know what? I don't know. They don't have the regulations that they do in the U.S., I guess. I guess that's, you know, standard carry-on in the Philippines.
Oh, my gosh, I can't believe you got that home.
Yeah, I got the machete.
And you got the broken broken diving goggles, too, so that's...
Yeah, and just to clear that up, you know, artists went first, and artists dove in face and goggle first into the water, and I thought, that's a good strategy because he doesn't lose any momentum. Malcolm dove in face first, goggles first into the water, and he dove in at a weird angle, and the mask flew off his head and sunk to the bottom of the ocean. They actually showed it during the challenge. Then Pete jumped in with the mask on, and he jumped in feet first, and he lost so much time because he had to flip around 180 degrees, and then he had no momentum. So when I got the goggles, I watched what everybody else did, and I'm like, I got the best way. I want to dive in like Malcolm and Artis did. When I went in there, they just shattered into a million pieces. I probably had 20 or 30 pieces of shards of glass in my eyeballs. Not my eyeballs, but all over my eyes and my forehead. And that's what caused my face to bleed so much, is I had glass everywhere. They had to pick them out. Spent about a half hour picking glass out of my face. I still think I have one piece of glass left because I got one little bump under my eye still.
Oh my
you are
God.
So lucky that glass didn't go into your eye. Can you imagine if you would have gone down in the history of Survivor, the guy who fell in the fire and then the guy who broke his eye with glass?
Oh, my gosh. I couldn't see anything. I'm underwater. I'm like, I've got this mask on my head. Why can't I see anything? I mean, it was crazy. And part of it was because the mask was gone. The other part was because there was so much blood in front of my face, it was clouding everything up.
Hey, oh, wow. So you didn't even realize that it had broken.
No, I didn't. I had no idea.
Wow.
Hey, I want to give a shout out to our chatters. We got an answer that Jan was in the final three in Thailand, thanks to Dog.
Thank you, instead of me calling her the crazy blonde lady who buried the bath.
Okay, so that same chatter, add up the ages. I'm 50, Denise's up, or Lisa's 49, and Denise is 42. So add up the ages. Do you have the ages of Thailand? I mean, Thailand.
Yeah, because Jan
like
was older. She was a lot older than that, I think. Brian would have been younger, so he would throw that off, though. But I would think they still might beat you, but we will see. Somebody add that up.
I don't know if Brian's 30 or if Brian's 40.
I'm sure. I bet you will see an answer. Normally,
we've
our chatters.
We've got awesome chatters out there. They'll get more on it.
I have a quick question, Scoopin. Did you know who the other two people were? You said you were all separated before the game. So did you have any idea who the other two players were going to be?
No, I didn't even know there was two other players. I mean, I knew.
Oh, you just thought it was you. You thought it was going to be the Scoopin
show. No. Well, they had asked me to be the only returning player on Pearl Island, season 7. I was all set. I had a plane ticket. I had everything. I was the only, I was the first returnee to come back. But I knew that there was some twist. They didn't tell me what it was, but I felt like I was not the only returning player. And, you know, I had heard Brains versus Braun. I had heard, you know, second chances. I heard all these scenarios. So I didn't have any idea until I was walking down this little village, and all of a sudden I get on the boat and I see two other heads, and it's Penner and Swan waving to me. You know, they brought me in last, and I'm thinking, okay, Penner, okay, Medivac, Swan, Medivac, where's everybody else? Where's all the Medivacs? You know, there's got to be more. And, you know, where's Bruce Kangai? Where's James?
Right.
Where's everybody else? And as we're in the boat, we weren't really allowed to talk, so I didn't know that it was just us three until we actually got on the big pirate ship with the tribes.
And so, wow. I'm so sorry. I don't mean. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was quickly just going to bring up Bruce. I was kind of surprised that he didn't make it. I thought he would have been a good one too. Do you know if he was asked?
I don't know. I actually saw him at the finale, but it was so briefly that I didn't have a chance to really ask him. But he's a pretty entertaining guy. You know, I like that. He didn't
Bruce.
Last very long, did he?
No, but Bruce is super sweet. He's very well loved. But you answered it. You started to answer a question that I've always wanted to ask. I'm a super fan too. How many other seasons have you been asked back for? Because you mentioned Pearl Island. What other ones were you asked for?
And then, the very next season, they said about a week before I was about to leave for Pearl Island, they said CBS changed the first All-Star. They were going to do the first All-Star, season 10, the big decade, and ratings were going down. So CBS bumped up the All-Star to season 8. So they said, Scoopin', you can't do Pearl Island because we've got to have you on the first All-Star. And so they said, would you please, you know, give up your plane ticket and go on All-Star? It was bad because I had cleared my whole calendar. I'd gotten everything all out, you know, for 3 months. And so I said, fine. So I was all set to go on All-Star. And a week before All-Star, I mean, it's a long story that I'm just not going to get into, but they had made a promise to Lex and Big Tom over a little faux pas during season Africa. And then, you know, Rupert turned out to be a big hero. So three new spots had to be opened up. And I was I was one of the expendables on those three new spots that had to be placed for the first All-Star. I was a week away from both of those seasons. And then they said, don't worry, we'll have you back. So they asked me back for that Stephanie Bobby John season. It was supposed to be me and Roger. And I don't know. They flew us into California. And I don't know if Roger didn't pass. I don't have no idea what, but I think that there was something up with Roger. And it didn't make sense to have me then and Stephanie or me and Bobby John because we didn't have really no connection together. So they said, we'll bring you back for, you know, fans' favorites. And then fans' favorites, I don't remember what happened. And then they, you know, Heroes Villains, they said, you're for sure on Heroes Villains. And I don't know what happened. They brought me, I was supposed to be Ozzy. I was supposed to be against Coach. And they begged me and begged me and begged me to go against Coach because Ozzy Coach doesn't really make any sense. They're two very different characters. But my mom was really sick in the hospital, and I, you know, they really said, come on, ask your mom. We really want you to do it. And they ended up grabbing Ozzy a week and a half before the show started off of some New Zealand backpacking adventure to get him to do that show. They had another season in the middle there where they were having all the cast in the crowd at the finale of one of the seasons, and they were going to have us with our bags packed, and they were going to have 30 of us in the crowd, and they were going to say, fan vote, pick your top 20 people.
Right.
We were gonna
I've heard that
20
rumor.
People. We're going to stand up and walk out of the auditorium and leave for the following season, and they've run that by twice. They were going to do that. I said, I think that sounds kind of hokey. I don't know. I mean, a part of it sounds good, but anyways, there's been a whole bunch of them. There's been a whole bunch of them.
I love that story. But see, things happen for a reason, because this is where you should have been, and it was awesome.
Yeah, it was, you know, I thought that my opportunity to win Survivor had bypassed because of all the success that all the returning players have had.
Right.
But when I got out there, I thought, wow, this bullseye is a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be. And then on day two, when Matt Singh lost the first challenge, we get back to camp, we're sitting in the shelter, and Pete says, I hope they get rid of Russell Swan. And I said, I thought, like, you got to be kidding me. Russell Swan on day two? Like, we didn't know that Russell was being crazy over there either.
Right.
So I knew I had a bullseye on my back. I didn't know it was a day two bullseye. I mean, they wanted returning players. Pete made it very clear that he wanted Penner and Russell Swan gone, which translates that he wants me gone. I mean, I knew that on day two. Jeff Kent, when we get to the merge, I went and I swam out to the river, middle of the ocean with Penner, and I said, what's going on? He said, I got everybody in my back pocket. I'm good. We're a loyal team of four. Let's make something work. And I said, great. I said, do you have the idol? And he hesitated. And I said, you hesitated. You got it. And he goes, yeah, I got it. So I swam up back to shore. I grabbed Jeff Kent and Carter, and I said, hey, guys, what's up? And Jeff Kent says, we hate returning players, Scoopin', but we hate Penner more than we hate you. He said, we're going to vote Penner out first. You're going to last three more days. So enjoy your next 3 days. We'll make it as comfortable as possible for you.
Whoa.
And I'm like, that was a mistake. You know, it's like playing with your cards face up. And so I spent the next 3 days, you know, planting seeds to get Jeff Kent gone. And people are like, why didn't you get rid of Pete? Why didn't you get rid of... I mean, people had no idea how much Jeff Kent wanted to get rid of returning players.
Right.
Well, you guys didn't, but we sure get, us viewers certainly could see that. I'm wanting Jerry before we lose it on the chat room. There was a question that one of our chatters wanted to ask Jerry.
Yes, one of the chatters wanted to find out why RC was treated so badly before the merge. That came from one of our chatters, BB Freak.
The answer is, did you see her at the reunion? At the
Okay, good answer.
You know, you saw live, unedited television. So when you see us at the reunion show, you can't hide behind editing at the reunion show. Well, we were at the reunion show. We do a dress rehearsal of the reunion show. They basically have us from 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday all the way until after the reunion show ends. And we do a dress rehearsal. And during that dress rehearsal, right in the middle of it, artist Sylvester blows up at Jeff Probst and says, I can't stand my edit. What the heck's the matter with you? Why did you edit me that way? I am not the angry black man. Let me repeat to you, Jeff, I am not the angry black man. And Probst is like, you artist, you've got to be kidding me. Listen to you. And he said, which is a great line, he said, artist, where was this guy on the show? This is why we cast you. Where was this guy? You sat there and said nothing.
I was boring.
Yeah, you sit there and said nothing for 22 days. You know, this is why we catch him. He goes, Jeff, I want to bring up at the reunion show that I'm not that way. That is not me. He said, Artis, you want to go there? I'll bury you. He said, let me tell you, Artis, I've been doing this for 25 seasons. And let me tell you, here's what it is. If somebody gets a good at it, they always say, that's exactly who I was.
Yep.
And if somebody gets a bad at it, they say, I was nothing like that. They misedited me. He goes, I'm going to tell you, you ask the people from the show, you get edited how you are. Do they sensationalize a little bit? Sure. Do they embellish a little bit for TV? Absolutely. But they can't show you catching a fish if you didn't catch a fish.
Right. That's so true.
And Penner got credit for a lot of things out there. You know, like they gave Penner 2 minutes of airtime, you know, trying to spearfish a stingray, and he didn't get it. I caught a stingray doing that exact same thing. And people say, well, why didn't they show you catching a stingray? I said, because my name's not Penner. So it's, you know, When Penner made that brilliant strategic move during the challenge where he took the balls out of the mud pit and laid them out for everybody else to do that, that was Carter's plan.
Was
Carter
it really?
They edited, they filmed Carter making the plan. They at the end they gave him full credit for the plan while they were cheering and jumping around. But they gave Penner credit for the strategic move because Carter's name isn't Penner.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
Scoop,
and
I had no idea here. I was giving Penner all the accolades for coming up with that.
Now, yeah, Penner's brilliant. Do not get me wrong. But the third thing is Denise is the one that recognized Lisa at the Wicker Ball Challenge and said, you're Lisa Welchel from Facts of Life. And she said, yes, I am. Try and keep it to yourself. Well, Denise went and told Penner. So Penner's the one that confronts her at the beach, and Penner gets credit for recognizing her. And Denise is the one that told Penner. Penner had no idea who she was.
Oh, my gosh.
And they said, why didn't Denise get credit for that? And I said, because Denise's last name isn't Penner. So
Michael Scoopinner. Are you sure you're not a gay guy? Because you were awfully gossipy. I swear to God, girl, you love to get some good gossip.
So here's the deal. I love Jonathan Penner. He might be the most entertaining player to ever play the game, at least one of the most entertaining players. He's friendly. He can tell stories. He's great to have around camp. He's a survivalist. He knows how to chop coconuts. He knows how to cut clams. He's great to have around camp. He could not stop being the returning player. It was like he was screaming from the mountaintop, I'm the returning player. And he kept reminding everybody that he was the returning player. And I kept saying, be quiet, Jonathan. I'm trying to shrink that bullseye. And it wasn't until the day he left that I never, ever heard the word returning player ever again.
No.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, speaking of coconuts, one of the funniest moments for us viewer, or for me as a viewer, was seeing Abby chopping at that coconut and it rolling and hitting.
Yeah, I'm calling sabotage on that one. I'm calling premeditated attempted murder. I can tell you.
I wish she was still on the line with us.
Oh, my gosh. We would banter back and forth, just like Penner and I. I mean, you know, there's a mutual respect for everything that Penner did in the game, for everything that Abby did in the game. You do it in the confines of the game, no matter what it is. I still think Johnny Fairplay's grandmother move, although it's hated by many, was one of the most brilliant moves ever in the game. I believe anything that you do in the game is brilliant. There's some players that are still playing the game outside of the game that, you know, I can't figure out. There's people still lying about their age and lying about things that happened. And I'm like, why? It's over. I respect all gameplay, but stuff after the game, I get kind of puzzled why they would continue to keep playing the game.
speaking of lying about ages, I looked through these little openers here. We did get an answer to the total ages. Jerry, did you write that down?
Actually, this current season has 7 years older than Thailand. Thailand was 133, and Philippines is equals 140 years. So they're seven
wow.
years older than Thailand. So Philippines wins.
Wow. So we are the oldest final three. I also, somebody told me that I had a record of the only person playing twice that never got a vote.
Oh. Wow, that's an incredible record to hold.
Yeah, Amanda played twice, and she got a couple of votes cast against her, but she used her immunity idol, and she blocked them. But she still got them. So, she, there's a kind of an asterisk there. So she played twice and was able to block two of her votes, but I'm the only one to play. And then the streak... The guy from People Magazine, Steve Helling, said that the streak of most consecutive days without a vote goes to Sandra because he said on one of her seasons she went all 39 days without getting a vote, and on the other season she went to, like, the sixth player left, which is, like, 30 days. So she might have gone, like, 67 or 68 days without a vote, and I only went 56 days without a vote. So the longest streak goes to Sandra, potentially. That's not verified yet, but the fact that I played two consecutive seasons without a vote. So there's just some interesting first out there.
I love little trivia and number things like this. That's something that I enjoy. Hey, speaking of getting your head hit, it was announced when you went swimming with those whale sharks, Malcolm says, Penner got headbutted. I didn't see the footage on that. Did you really get bumped that much, or was that just made for TV?
No, I ended up in that darn thing's mouth.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, I take it back. I ended up on its mouth. If that whale shark was yawning, I was Jonah.
Wow.
I was done. I mean, what happened is I swam, we couldn't find one. So we couldn't find one. And so I swam down about 20 feet below and I turned upside down and I was grabbing people's toes and going way down deep and pretending I was a whale shark. And all of a sudden, bam, I'm on the mouth of a whale shark.
Wow.
That had to be amazing.
So I couldn't, we were miles and miles and miles away from shore. We're in the middle of the ocean, not in a cage of any sort. So, as soon as I turned around and saw that thing, I thought, I'm Steve Irwin, all over again. we've all seen those shows where docile animals in the wild all of a sudden turn on human beings for unexpected reasons. Well, I thought, why in the world is this thing attacking me? And it turns out it didn't attack me. It either had its eyes closed or it just wanted to goof around, but it ran right. It rammed me. I mean,
it
full-on rammed me.
Your heart was beating so fast.
It's a pretty big creature. I had no idea how big those things were.
I can't even imagine. I wish we had better pictures of seeing, like you and that creature just with close-ups, like you were Steve Irwin, seeing the two of you underwater. I wish we could, see those pictures and just see your face and see what it looked like, when you actually got rammed by this thing. It would just be so awesome to see.
I think what happened is it came out of nowhere. A whale shark is about, when you're 20 feet down, it's about the same exact color of the water.
Oh, okay.
The closer it gets to the surface, the more visible it gets because the water gets lighter and clearer. But at 20 feet down, it's pretty dark down there. And I didn't know what hit me. I turned around and couldn't see it because it's about the same color as the water. And I think that's about the time that the cameraman went, whoa, I better turn this camera on. So I don't think they got real good footage of it. You know, just like the fire incident. You know, Mark Burnett will go on record, and it's like the Immaculate Reception. They'll say, why didn't you show him falling in the fire? And he said, they said, do you have that footage? And he never would say. He would say, that's a survivor secret, whether we have that footage or not.
Which means they don't.
Probably, you know, but he just never, you know, but they did put a parental discretion warning on TV, so it, maybe it could have been more graphic, maybe it wasn't more graphic.
It was
but,
awful.
You know,
as they hanging down.
Yeah, that is one of those images or moments of TV that is burned in your memory. I mean,
it really is.
I will always remember that shot of your hands. Somebody in our chat room said they had heard you survived an airplane crash. Is that just a rumor?
That was the same year that I did Survivor showed. So I fell in the fire on November 10th, 2000. I got home back to the States on December 6th. The Survivor aired January 28th that year, the premiere. I fell in the fire on March 1st, 2001 on TV. And the show ended, I believe, about May 1st. On then September 11th happened, and the day they opened the airspace for small planes again, I was getting my pilot's license. So I had an event in Mackinac Island where they filmed Somewhere in Time, and my pilot friend said, hey, let's fly up there. Let's take the kid. So I had my wife, my pregnant wife. I had one of my kids, a three-year-old girl. The pilot had one or two of his kids. We had actually too many people for how many seats we had, but we had so many little kids. And we crashed into the middle of Lake Michigan. The plane shattered into 1,000 pieces, flipped on its back, and we started to sink, and I was trapped inside the plane. And I thought, how can I survive something like that? And I'm going to drown inside this plane. And the plane was broken in half. And I looked through the crack, and I saw everybody standing on shore, but they were in shock. So they weren't helping me get out of the water or out of the plane. They were just standing there staring at the plane, and the pilot was sitting on the wing upside down with it all bloody, just like a kid that had lost his football. You know, he was just so sad because he had not even made a payment on the plane, but I was able to, because the plane was so busted up, to wiggle my way out of it. And, you know, I was cut and beat up, you know, and bruised up pretty good, but I didn't sustain any long-term injuries from it.
Hey, Scoop, you'll appreciate this as you tell me this story. I'm retired, but I spent most of my career as a flight service specialist for the FAA. So did the pilot file a flight plan? How were you rescued?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And there was the pilot ended up getting grounded. The air control person ended up getting fired. There was a lot of, as you know, for a plane to crash, there's about 15 things that have to go wrong, and all 15 things have to go wrong. I mean, if only 14 out of 15 things go wrong, you land safely. So,
right.
It was just from the pilot, I was just a pilot in training. I was in the cockpit. I was in the co-pilot seat. Everything that could have gone wrong, including finally running out of gas, bad weather, you know, not being able to find radars, taking us in the wrong direction from flight control because they were in Minneapolis. We were in Michigan. We were too low below the radar. It was just I don't want to say a comedy of errors because it really wasn't that funny. But
that's not funny.
Yeah.
It's more like you're the real-life version of that movie Unbreakable. It's like people are just trying to kill you over and over, and you just won't die, will you, Scoop?
Scoop, we have another one of your castmates on the switchboard I'm about to bring up. I think you'll recognize this person. Pete, thank you so very much for calling in tonight. How are you?
Hey, what's going on?
We're doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. Just got home from the bar.
Just got home from the bar, huh?
Yeah, Thursday
night.
We're
getting a drunk call from Pete.
12 o'clock. It's going to be really annoying on Facebook and Twitter with everyone saying the world is going to end. So, you know, coming out tonight.
Well, we're glad you're here with us. We're not going to let the world in. We're going to have fun. We have Scoop on with us. We have Kobe Archa from Palau. And we're glad you called in.
Oh, of course. It's good to be here.
Yeah, Pete was one of the very, very strategic players, I mean, to ever play the game. Had a pretty solid alliance, but I think he was kind of running the ship himself. And but, I mean, played a way more strategic game than I gave him credit for while we were on the island. I mean, a lot of respect I have for the way Pete played that game.
Dude, but, I mean, come on. Abby and Lisa both, like, thought they were going to air out all their dirty laundry during, like, during tribal council. I don't know. It was just ridiculous.
I was going to say, I have a question since I'm a fan. When you went out there, were you trying to emulate, like, anybody in the past that has played the game, or were you just trying to play, like, a crazy game Pete's way? Or was there, like, a particular past player that you liked?
Neither. I went into the game with really no strategy because, you know, like, you're like everybody who has a strategy going out there, I mean, you're going to have to adopt to, like, what's around you. And if you can't adopt, then you're going to go home. But, like, I wanted to just sit there like Denise and just be, like, you know, the invisible person and then, like, do something more towards the end. But I don't know. I just couldn't sit there anymore and not keep winning and not doing anything. So, you know, plus I didn't want to be in an alliance with RC and that whole story, but, you know, I wanted to have a good time. I was tired of playing Campfire.
That's a good answer.
Can't blame
it's a real
you there.
Answer.
Yeah.
Well, we certainly enjoyed watching this season and watching you on Survivor. It was one of the most entertaining, one of the most enjoyable Survivor seasons that we've seen in years, and we enjoyed every minute of it. What was your favorite moment that you had out there in Survivor while you were out there in the jungle? I know some of the time out there wasn't so enjoyable, but what was your most enjoyable moment?
I mean, well, I just want to quote say, like, everybody really liked the season, and I think the reason that everyone liked it is because nobody knew or majority of people didn't know how to keep their mouths shut. So, I mean, and that me included with the whole Malcolm thing, which I guess is a little, looking back, it was a little ridiculous. But, I mean, like, it's just a bunch of people who couldn't be quiet, and this is the kind of season you get when that happens. Like, if you have someone like Kim just running the entire show, I mean, it's great for Kim, but it's boring for everybody else. You know what I mean?
Correct. That's what I was saying earlier. I feel like the season was really filled with type A personalities. So, like you said, they cannot help themselves.
Yeah, it's just like someone says something and it just comes out.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking about, Pete, how you just roll the dice. You know, you make a decision and you roll the dice. And you said it a couple times on confessionals that if, you know, if Abby could have kept her mouth closed, you know,
right,
that we wouldn't, you know, the tribes wouldn't have been so against the alliance. They, you know, instead of wanting to join it, they, you know, everybody at one point was in your alliance. You had you, Abby, Artis, me, and Lisa in that alliance. You had Jeff Kent and Carter in that alliance. You had you probably had Penner at one point into that alliance.
You want to know where it all went wrong, though? I mean, like, the reason it all went wrong and the reason I got stuck basically going home was because I had to keep recycling people because she kept pissing everybody off. And eventually I ran out of people, and this is what happened. I mean, I should have.
I would
but
say
I mean, like,
true.
She gave me her immunity. I had her immunity idol in my pocket for the RC thing. Like, because, you know, she was like, oh, you look nervous. Here's, you know, I'm going to play it for whatever. And I took it. But I'm a retard for giving it back. I didn't even think about it. I was just like, here's back. You know, I should have just stole it. But imagine how explosive and the amount of awesomeness would have happened if I never gave it back. That would have been epic.
That would have been epic. That would have been great TV.
You know,
I know, when I
gave
it back, I was like,
rule.
Oh, shit. Shouldn't have did
you
that.
You can't steal the idol. I mean, just to clarify
that. I was
just
about to hand it to me. So,
but she
you can't
gave
steal
it to
the
him.
Idol, but she, when you give it to somebody and they don't give it back, that's an interesting little technicality there. That you're right. I don't think you have to give it back.
I'm pretty sure I don't have to give it back.
Oh, my gosh. That would have created the most explosive moment in the history of
the game. Yeah, you guys thought you couldn't stand Abby before. You wouldn't be able to stand Abby then. That would have been awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I could handle Abby. I mean, like, I guess everybody else couldn't handle her the same way I did. Like, you just ignore it, and you tell her to go away, and then she goes away. But
I have to say, I thought you had the patience of a saint.
You know what? In real life, I have absolutely no patience. So even my mom was
you
like,
found
was
it
so
out there.
Abby.
You must have found it out there on the island
well,
because
you
had the patience of a saint out there.
Much do anyway.
Hey. Pete, before we run out of time, there are some people that are wondering if you want to expound on the reason, the way you voted in the jury vote.
I mean, Denise was the exact game I wanted to play. Like, I wanted to sit there, I mean, obviously not lose every tribal council and go there every single time, but I mean, I just respected the game that she played. And the only reason I didn't vote for Mike was, I would never have voted for Lisa. I'll be straight up about that. And if Mike brought Abby to the final three, I would have voted for Mike. I just thought it was too easy. I just thought it was way too easy to be the swing vote. I mean, every single PC, it was always, who's Mike going to vote with? Who's Mike going to vote with? I mean, I guess you could consider that like extreme strategy. But Denise was, for some reason, Denise was like the invisible person that no one ever paid attention to. And
one of the most powerful female players and that I've ever seen on that game. And her size, I was just always blown away by her strength athletically.
Yeah, and that too. I mean, I didn't really consider that much, but
her husband said it, you know, when they had the family visit, and he said, you know, she has so much love and so much power in this little bitty package, and it's so true. She is so powerful, and she's so small. You know, she's a little woman, but she is very powerful, very athletic, and she, you know, maybe it's because she is a therapist. Maybe she really, I think
that
probably
too,
what did her the best is that she did sit back and listen instead of do what you're talking about, Pete, and run her mouth. She sat back and listened to everyone. And that's a great game.
As far as I saw, like, her and Malcolm never spoke, which is impressive to me because that's why I didn't think they were tight. I never saw them going off having conversations or anything. So I didn't think it was that tight. And as like, you see the tribal councilors when you're on the jury, you see all the little alliances starting to unravel and, like, people giving each other looks at tribal council. And then in another part, you can see where people are actually standing. You know what I'm saying?
Somebody in the chat room wants to know why you trusted Malcolm so much.
Well, we actually had a plan for Final Three, me, Malcolm, Abby. I mean, we kind of knew we were going to split who's throat at four. It was kind of like unspoken agreement. But, I mean, it would have been two idols riding the two idols to the end. And it seemed like great gameplay, but I guess he thought he had something better.
Hey, I have a question to make Scoopin feel bad the rest of his life. If she would have taken Lisa and Abby to the end, you said you would have voted for Scoopin. Do you think the rest of the jury would have also given him the million?
Artists, no. I think so. I mean, could Abby
have made Scoopin feel bad?
I mean, could Abby have swayed people's votes? Maybe, but she wouldn't have swayed mine.
Good to know, because I wasn't sure about that, if you would have voted for her or not.
No.
Yeah, I was wondering. I saw her working you, though. I saw her working you, and it
winking.
Seemed.
I don't fall for that silly crap.
Yeah, and it just in my mind, I thought, wow, she could really potentially tell a pretty powerful story of how she got there. But the problem is, Pete, you know, at the final five, Malcolm was going to give his idol to Denise. And we could have voted for Malcolm or Denise. Neither one of them would have counted. Abby was going home anyway.
That's true.
I mean, so she was at that point unsavable. And so, I mean, you and I can both sit there and say, hey, I regret this and I regret that.
Oh, yeah, of course. I would do that every night.
Yeah, so it's, you know, sometimes the gambles pay off and sometimes they don't. And, you know, nobody can play a perfect game. And, you know, nobody can say they play the perfect game.
Yeah, not every game, not every single time you play, you're going to be able to do, like, you know, get it 100%. There's always, but some
always,
people just
it's
do
always,
get lucky.
It's always the coulda, woulda, shoulda. Hey,
yeah.
Scoopin, I have one quick question. Who came in second and who came in third? You or Lisa?
It was
or were
five,
you both second? So you were both second?
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, they I guess in past seasons, and I don't even know if I'm supposed to reveal how they did this, but maybe I won't because
no, they
said
another season.
Scoop, I'll tell you what I've heard. In past seasons, they consider how many times your name had been written down. Is that true?
Well, if they did that, I don't think Lisa or mine.
Yeah, that never came up anyway.
So it would that wouldn't be a factor anyway. But I don't know. I think only one, I'm told, and maybe your chat room historians might know this, only one other season did all three players get votes. So Jeff Probst is so big on this final three,
oh.
But almost never does a final three even come into play. It ends up being between one or another person usually.
Right.
Yeah. That's usually because somebody's better.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, the person that wins is the person that should have won. I mean, there's no question. The game speaks for itself. You got to count every part of the game. You know, the part of the game, and this is what I said that I underestimated, you know, or that you can't control is Ponderosa. But you can't control anything. You can't control people's votes. You can't control how they vote at any tribal council. You can ask them and you can hope and they can tell you something. But, you know, sometimes it's different. I mean, it's a great game because there's so many variables. It's almost impossible to control everything.
It is. It does seem impossible. You feel that you cover all these bases, but you can't cover them all. Pete, how much how much campaigning was going on at Ponderosa? Was it like a constant thing you're talking about?
Yeah, none that I saw. Basically, all we did was like go out, like go to like through see Philippines, like see the Philippines a little bit, what we could of Manila, and just drinking around the pool and eating. Like, I don't know. Like, at that point, nobody really wants to be there anymore. I mean, it's great being a part of the jury, but, like, you just want to go home.
Okay,
so, like,
I'm going to announce
maybe there
real
was
quick.
Campaigning. I have no idea. I didn't see it.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Sherry.
We're probably going to go over podcast, into podcast with this show. So for those of you who are listening right now, in 3 minutes, the show will cut off for those who are listening live, but you will be able to listen to the rest of the show in podcast after the show ends. I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight live and listening to the show. We're going to carry on and talk to those who are with us tonight and ask them a few more questions because Pete joined us late, and we appreciate Scoop being here with us and Kobe being here with us. And we're going to ask a few more questions and then wrap up the show. I want to thank everyone for being here with us. Wish you a very Merry Christmas and hope all of your holidays are wonderful, safe, and just have a great holiday, everyone. But we're going to carry on the show and not stop it at the two-hour mark like we normally do. So when it stops, we're just going to carry on. So happy holidays, everyone. God bless you all, and have a safe and healthy holiday. But, Pete, because you joined us late, I just don't want to stop this. You know, I'm so thankful that you called in. It's wonderful to talk to you and Scoop and Kobe. And
yeah. Well,
we got 2 minutes until the end of the world when you're dirty right now. And you're fire and me screaming, it's because I'm dying. So you know.
We couldn't have better company to end the world with. So,
but you know what I never thought like would really screw me off about it? They merged at 11, and they've never merged at 11 ever.
I was bringing
us
that
up
earlier, Pete.
What's up?
Yeah. No, I brought that up earlier before you came on the phone. Was that I was
really
confused by?
I want to say that it's bullshit.
Yeah, that there was an 8-member jury. I was so expecting that for they throw a twist and there would be only a final 2 instead of a final 3. That still has me confused.
But there wasn't. So I want to know, because we were talking about around camp, I don't know, is Cooper, you're still here, right?
Yeah.
We were talking around camp that we're going to throw, like, we were either going to throw that challenge or we're going to throw the next one. So we decided not to throw the lacrosse one, but we decided to throw the one after that. Because we were going to merge at 10. They've never merged at 11, ever, in Survivor. So we were going to throw that one. I want to know if they merged before because they didn't want to see us sit there and waste the challenge. You know? I don't know.
Wow.
Who knows?
You know, they swear that they have all that planned before you go out there. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. But Jeff swears that all the merges and all that stuff is pre-planned months before, so that way they can't be accused of changing it during the game.
Right.
Because that came up our season because we kept winning and, you know, we took Oolong out. And so we were wondering whether or not they had planned to merge or just got rid of it because we were winning so much. And they swear that that was planned beforehand.
Yeah.
And I would back them up on that only because, you know, eventually it would come out because there's so many people that are involved in challenges. I would think that eventually somebody would rat them out and say, yeah, that's right, they really do change up the challenges. But some of those challenges are pretty intricate where they have, you know, 11 spots carved out of a pretty big wooden platform. And, you know, certainly they could have done
the whole. I think there was that one challenge that Abby was sitting there and never participated, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good point.
So
good
then
point.
There's holes in some of them because
Abby's
for somebody to not get picked for a reward challenge. That was weird, too.
Someone in the chat room said that Dana quitting supposedly messed up the schedule.
That's probably true also.
Yeah, and I'm told that they'll never have a season of 18 people or 16 people anymore because of the people that are quit/medevaced. I mean, it
right.
seems like every season one or two people. I mean, our season, you know, you could look at Dana, but you can kind of also look at Zane a little bit. Now, you know, I mean, their tribe, everybody on their tribe said Zane, you know, he quit because he wanted a cigarette. And then, a day later, he changed his mind. And he's like, wait a minute, that was really stupid. I don't want a cigarette more than I want $1 million.
you
know,
a lot
so,
of cigarettes.
But by then it was too late. And so they, you know, they ended up getting rid of him. But, and then the season before that, Colton, you know, quit/medevaced, you know, whatever, you know, story that you want to go with on that one. But
that leads to a good question, though, Scoop, because I feel like it has gotten harder on the contestants over time with the rain and the food. Like, they seem to think more miserable means better TV. So do you feel like, since you were so old school in Australia, do you feel like it was harder then or now when it comes to just the general physical conditions for the contestants?
Well,
or is it the same?
Well, it rained 22 of the 42 days in Australia, and it rained about 22 of the 39 days out in there. So, I mean, the rain, but see, the difference in the rain was the tropical rain that we experienced in the Philippines was way worse than the rain we experienced in Australia. And secondly, we were on land. I mean, I was eating turtles and snakes and fish and birds and pigs and, you know, all kinds of things. And, you know, we were hungry, but never the hunger. I mean, Pete, how hungry did you get?
No, like, it was ridiculous. And then the amount of energy you'd have to expend to go get fish, and the fish was, like, the size of something you would feed your fish at home. It was just it was ridiculous. I mean, it was not worth your time or energy. So you just sit on the beach and do nothing.
Yeah. So I would say that at the expense of, you know, the more stuff happening around camp, that it was by far harder. Even if I just count the first 17 days of my experience, it was harder in the Philippines than it was, you know, because they're just. We were on a really overfished coral reef. We combed both islands we were on. There wasn't anything alive on any one of these islands except fireflies and mosquitoes. we were on an overfished coral reef, the biggest fish I ever saw. You know, Pete just described the size of it. it just wasn't there. There's just not stuff. You know, when I was catching those 20-pound fish, he found a reef. There was a reef where Ozzy was, but there was no
I don't know why. I don't know why Jeff and them seem to have that in their head, that the more miserable it is, the better the TV is. Because, I mean, I don't think that that adds to the game. I just think it makes people more miserable.
Yeah, and Abby, it was either the second night or the third night, she woke up, or she sat up in the middle of the night, and she said, I quit. I'm done.
Wow.
And, you know, and just because she said it, there wasn't everybody at one point thought, this is too much to handle, because none of us had ever experienced that kind of misery before.
Yeah, it wouldn't stop raining, and it's not the rain that's annoying. It's the fact that when it's raining, you can't sleep, and not sleeping, I think, is like sleep deprivation is a lot worse than not eating.
Right,
yeah, you're probably right. I mean, just combine. So you're cold. You're not refueling your body like Peaches said because of that. So it is, and especially for like people like Denise and Abby that didn't have any real meat on their bones. Lisa was miserable. I mean, she would just sit there in tears, crying all night long, and I didn't know what to do. You know, and I kept thinking, I got 220 pounds on me on day one. That I'm, as much as I'm hurting, some of these lighter people had to be hurting a whole lot worse. And so when I saw
Carter.
Dana.
I don't know, Carter.
Oh, my
did
gosh.
Poor Carter. Poor sweet Carter.
No, the kid has no body fat. I don't know how
I
he
know.
Did.
Some of those people you could see. I mean, it really was, it came through the TV to see how miserable they were. And I was so thankful later in the season to see that the rain had finally stopped and you guys were able to, keep fire going and people weren't so just miserable.
Yeah.
Even enough firewood. They would say, boil your clothes at the challenges. And I would say, give us some dang firewood.
Oh, my God.
They could dry.
That had to be just one of the most hardest things to watch was to see how miserable you all were early on in the season, just freezing and the rain not stopping, everyone just shivering and not eating, and knowing how, I don't know how your parents, and your wives, parents, loved ones watch you suffer like that. It has to be so hard. As a fan, it's hard to watch you go through that. To have loved ones out there and know that your loved ones are watching you go through that, I don't know how they suffered through it, because if one of my loved ones was going through that, I would be an absolute wreck at home, just wanting to put food in their mouth,
Yeah, but by the time the loved ones came, the rain and the cold had stopped.
Right.
And we were out on the beach, so the mosquitoes were less of an issue. They were never a non-issue. I mean, Pete got bit up pretty good. Abby got beat up the worst by those mosquitoes. They loved their Brazilian blood.
But there's a great scene that that basically describes the whole thing, like all of us when we were out there. It's the one with Malcolm trying to make fire at Matt Singh, and they don't even have music. It's just silent and depressing. I don't know if you guys remember.
Yeah, I do.
That was like everybody every day. It's like you go back from this long journey, you have to make firewood, but it's cold and everything is wet.
I can't imagine.
And maybe it's what's so life-changing about the game. I mean, maybe when you look back on it, the fact that you made it through something as tough as that. You would quit.
It's such a pure experience that people just don't get. They see the TV show side of it, but you just can't describe the pureness of that existence.
Mike, when they had the loved ones come back, and Malcolm had already chosen two people to be given that gift of having their loved ones stay, and you yelled out, ask for another. did you think that he would be given another, or did you have any inkling beforehand that he might even have a chance of having another pick, or was that just like?
I didn't know that. I mean, I was kind of surprised when he said yes, and then I was even more surprised when he picked me.
Wow.
Because I knew Denise was his original alliance, and, you know, he said he was put in the toughest position ever, but we had that alliance of four, and, you know, I was faced with that same exact decision, the very next reward challenge, and both times Denise was left out of them, and I can't even tell you exactly why we left her out. You know, maybe because we thought she would... You know, I had talked to Malcolm before that, and I said, Malcolm, if I win, you know, who should I take? Denise? Should I take Lisa? You know, we strategized about who he would take it. He's like, no, you take me. And, you know, part of me thought strategically, I got to keep Malcolm close to me because I didn't want him to go create something else, you know, behind my back.
Right.
So I wanted to take Malcolm. And, you know, some people thought I should have taken Abby, and I considered taking Abby for, you know, a swing vote. And, I mean, you consider everything. I mean, you always consider. I considered getting rid of Lisa at the final four. I mean,
really?
I don't
know.
I don't know how seriously I considered it, but, I mean, you consider every option.
Well, you have
and,
to out there. I mean, you have
and,
to. It's
you know,
a
Malcolm
game for $1 million.
Malcolm said at the final tribal council, he said, after he kind of beat up Denise a little bit and let her have it just to kind of, you know, kind of give it back to her a little bit, he said, but it makes me kind of mad, but I'm going to keep a promise I made to you on day one or something like that. In other words, he had made a promise to her that if he made finals, that he would vote for her. If she made finals, he would vote for him. And he said, I'm going to keep that promise. And, you know, he's keeping the promise because he probably felt like she deserved it also. But he actually said it. It didn't air. It, you know, they didn't air every part of Final Tribal.
Yeah, that was like
I think
2 hours.
I think they aired most of the significant stuff. But, I mean, they do leave a lot of stuff out. Sometimes it even surprises me how much they leave out.
Yeah.
Well, Malcolm did in a cameo explain why he chose the people he chose to be able to spend the night with their loved ones. After he made his choices in a cameo, they showed him saying that he left Denise out and he picked the people he picked because he had to keep you close in that alliance because you were voting with him and Denise. And
it turns out that was, you know, one of his big blunders is having Justice, you know, come there to camp. But who would have thought, you know?
Yeah,
I want to touch on something you just brought up, Pete, as far as the jury questions. I know these tribals, having talked with survivors in the past, can last several hours, 2-3 hours, and we only get to see a small part of them. But I've always wondered how much of the jury questions don't make the edit. And it always appears like we're hearing everything, but apparently those get clipped up there too, huh?
Yeah, and you have to, kind of, but you have to worry, like, whether they think it's important, whether they know the outcome of the show and they're going to edit it accordingly, you know, I don't know.
Well,
that's on their end. I don't know why they choose.
Here's something that I noticed, and maybe it's because it was edited out, but I was noticing as jury members were coming up and asking questions that the majority of the eight, I only think there was maybe a couple, 2 or 3 of them that even asked Denise a question. All the other ones were asking Scoop and Lisa questions, and I was noticing that as I was jotting little notes down. So did everybody, all the jury members, address all 3 people, or did they ask sometimes?
Not everybody addressed everybody.
Yeah. The other thing I was wondering about, Pete, was when Probst at the finale reunion posed the what if, with, you know, if it was Malcolm and Denise, it seemed like the people were kind of caught off guard because the hands were kind of, you know, they were.
No, we knew that question was coming.
Okay.
Like, would you have voted for Malcolm if Malcolm was going to be in the final three? We knew it was coming, and we told Malcolm, I mean, I think he has it in some interviews online, that me, Penner, and Carter all decided that if Jeff asked that question, we were purposely not going to raise our hands.
I didn't see him raise their hands.
Jeff was
going to
ask that question fishing for an answer. He knew what answer he was going to get. So it was funny that we could purposely, you know, screw up the fishing of his answer.
A little revolt.
Yeah. Penner was like, that's a great idea. Let's do that. So we did it.
Oh,
hey,
my goodness.
Scoop, I have to ask you this question, because some of past survivors that have gone on the memory walk say they hated doing that. How did you feel going through that memory walk?
I loved the fact that they brought that back into the game.
I think it's in the ass.
You know, the problem is that it was probably the hottest day of the whole 39 days.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And
light shit on fire?
You know, and we had to walk up this hill that was the steepest hill in all of the Philippines, and we kept having to go back and retake it, different angle. And while we were doing it, it felt so picturesque. We had to go back and do it again for the helicopter, do it again for the round camera, and do it again for the flat camera, and you know, I'm telling you, it was so exhausting to do that. And we set the big hut on fire. We got in a boat and drove straight to the final immunity challenge.
Okay.
I mean, we were exhausted. And Malcolm,
I was
going to
say, you. Go ahead.
Malcolm said to me, I'm so glad we just did that because Scoop and Denise and Lisa are going to be a lot more exhausted than I am. You know, because we're twice his age. You know, we're twice his age. So he was loving the fact that we were. But I don't. That was one of the more exhausting experiences of the entire deal. And you know, they also said, hey, this is an acknowledgement. Make sure you don't say anything below the belt. You know, this is sort of like a tribute to the survivors. So, you know, that's why nothing, you know, real angry or crazy is said. And so it's a nice little tribute. I mean, it beats sitting around camp, you know?
You mentioned that it was one of the hottest days you spent out there. I'm sure you were thrilled to light a fire with that hot day. Speaking of below the belt, I think if I wrote this down right, what you said about Pete, and I don't even remember who said it, oh, he kept Abby too long. Was that what it was said, Pete?
Well, it's true. no, it was Malcolm, I think, that said it.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think that's pretty obvious. I mean, if Pete could have found another Abby, and you know what? There was a time when
I thought I had Carter.
Yeah, and I don't know. Did Carter? It's interesting to get inside Carter's head and find out where he actually was after he lost Kent, because a man without a home for a while there. And
yeah,
you did
he
relate
to
great, and you know, they're great friends today. I mean, Pete and Carter are two of the guys that travel around and, you know, have a great relationship after the game. There's only a couple people that are still, you know, kind of sore about the game and, you know, still feuding online. And one of them's a female that we talked about earlier today. We already talked about, he said, why was Tandang so much against RC? And I said, did you watch the reunion show?
Yeah. I mean, she got a really nice edit. I'm not going to lie. Like, it was like the nerdy kid in class. I mean, the bunch of bullies were stealing her lunch money. Like, there were reasons for.
Yeah, it was mostly seemed like a majority of the edit was showing Abby saying something nasty or attacking her or something of that nature.
But definitely to make Abby look worse. I mean, that was the reason.
At the finale, Pete, were you surprised? It sounds like I already know the answer to this, but you were not surprised what Archie said?
No, I didn't think she was. I didn't think she was gonna like jump into a question like when I was being asked a question by Jeff Probst. But you know, I knew it was gonna happen. I just didn't know when. But it happened.
It's a shame. I'd like to know from both of you, if you were Jeff Probst at the finale of Survivor this season, is there any question that you would have asked during the finale that Probst didn't ask?
You go first, Scoop.
Are you talking about the reunion show or the finale?
I think she's talking about reunion.
The reunion show.
Oh, okay. I was thinking when you said finale, I was trying to put myself into the finale. You know what? I was thrilled that he actually finally, for the first time in multiple seasons, talked to every single person.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was cool that he did that. And it took away, you know, I didn't think he gave Denise enough of her share. They gave, you know, Lisa a whole segment.
Oh,
and, you know,
15 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. It just, you know, it's... You know, and I think he did it because, you know, he's having her as a co-host on a talk show and he's trying to build the ratings. And I understand from a business perspective why he did it. But it's like Denise won this game. Let's hear from Denise. I mean, she's sitting in the first stool.
Yeah.
I just want to hear about Angie.
I have to jump in on that comment because one of the things I wrote down as I, take notes because we do these shows. And I don't get me wrong. I enjoyed Lisa. I liked watching her on the show. I give her props to how far she went. But I wrote down a note saying how much time he spent, Probst that is, talking to Lisa. And it just seemed excessive, and, you know. But now that you say it's maybe a business type of thing, it makes a little more sense to me, Scoop.
I love Lisa.
Okay,
yeah.
I was going to say, y'all didn't ask me what I would have asked if I was Jeff Probst, so I'm going to tell you what I would have asked. I would have asked Pinner if he regretted being so shitty to leave that the final tribal, looking back now. Because as a viewer, that came across really harsh and left a bad taste in my mouth. Yeah, when he threw her under the bus for being Blair from the back black, I thought it was...
He was going to throw her under the bus a lot earlier. Probst asked him to save it for Final Tribal.
I didn't like it as a viewer. Like I said, I know how things are edited. Because I think unless you just know the history of sitcoms, you would think everybody on the jury... I mean, like I said, you wouldn't have voted for her anyway. But I think when he did that, everybody on the jury thought, oh, she's famous and rich. Well, she's not... rich, you know, they don't get paid for those old TV shows like people do now. So
right.
I didn't like the way he did it. That's all. So I wonder if he regrets that at all, because I think it did turn a lot of fans off on him.
I thought it was funny.
It was very entertaining, and even at my expense, so I say this because in the scope of the game, I respect everything that happens. And, you know, it was a jab at me. It was a jab at Denise. It was a jab at Lisa. It was funny. I didn't understand the yoke and the oxen thing. I didn't really understand what he meant by that. But he got, you know, almost a standing ovation by the jury after that.
I heard that.
You know, so it's, I mean, they didn't stand up. But, I mean, it was, I think Penner is entertaining on steroids. He just really is. I think Pete's one of the best strategists in the game. I think that he got an alliance where the strategy was very telegraphed, and it was never telegraphed by Pete because I was floored when I watched how much Pete was actually controlling the game as I was watching the show compared to when
Scooping,
I was out there.
You're
but,
at the bottom of the alliance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so they kept telling me where I stood in it, and I, you know, that was. But I think he played a Rob Sesternino type game. I mean, I really do. I mean,
if anybody's worthy of coming back into this game, Malcolm is definitely one. Denise, obviously because she's a winner. But I would say, that Pete, you're right up there with Malcolm and Denise. And you get into an alliance,
keep
your mouth shut.
Thank you.
Aw, and that 19, Scoop and Love Sue.
I think that's well put, Scoop. I just think that for me, it seemed like Pete got unlucky with his numbers. That he was counting on just started disappearing on him. But initially, as I was watching it, I thought Pete's going to go a long way. He seems
to
be very strategic. It seems like he's got a good grasp of what's going on, and he's actually appears to be controlling some of these people. And that brings up a good question, though. You mentioned it, Scoop, as you watched it play out on TV. Were there any what was the most surprising thing that either you or Pete saw that you didn't know was going on while you were in the game?
I didn't know that. I didn't see that coming at all.
You didn't know what?
I didn't until like the very, very end. Obviously, from not even watching the show, but like the Scoopin' and Lisa thing, I didn't see that one coming. I had no idea that you two had an alliance.
They had that well hidden.
Yeah. Talking in the dark and stuff.
Yeah, and it worked out good. I didn't have any idea, Pete, how strategic you were playing the game. I mean, when I got to the merge.
Did I try to put my personality on the back burner? If I ever played again, I would just go balls to the walls crazy mode because, I was trying to not involve any of, my personal feelings into all of these decisions. And, I don't know, I didn't want anyone to be turned off of me. So I wanted to be very neutral. I mean, it casually came out I yelled at RC a couple of times, but then I always apologized, so I made it better.
I honestly thought, Pete, that you were going to go farther than Carter because initially Carter was so quiet, and we didn't see that much strategy come out of Carter. And I thought you were going to go, much further in the game than Carter was. And
the problem is he had to step up. He had to. He became the controlling factor in that tribe because he was the only one that really would. I mean, he had to try and quiet Abby down, and Artis. I'm not sure if Artis, said five words to anybody. Lisa would come back to me and say Artis is, ready to explode on you, and I'm like, oh my gosh. So, unfortunately, that put Pete in the leadership role, and he became a big threat to anybody else out there. When you become a threat, unfortunately, especially with a three-person alliance, I mean, we had one last shot to get rid of him, to break up the three-player jury. And we thought Abby had the idol and that, she might give it to Pete, but she'd never give it to Artis, and that's the reason Artis went first. You win an immunity necklace or, Carter goes left instead of right and the whole game changes. I mean, nobody played this brilliant game that, like a Kim Spaulding game where there was no – I mean, anything could have happened in our game, and I think that's what made it such a great season.
I agree. Although I hated that final immunity when I went home. It was three-tiered. I thought it was BS. there's no way. The second I saw it, I'm like, there's no way I'm winning this.
That had to be tough.
Yeah, the challenges were interesting. I mean, I definitely, if I ever have to go back, I got to figure out how to do a dang puzzle, man.
I was going to say, there were more puzzles in this Survivor than there ever has been before.
Yeah, it's usually balance these teacups and keep balancing the teacups.
There was more puzzles. I said that many times on the show. And I think if we go back and watch, I think there was more puzzles in this Survivor than in any other Survivor ever. It just seemed like puzzle after puzzle after puzzle after puzzle. And I was like, oh, my gosh, another puzzle.
Yeah, I just, and they're very abstract. The puzzles aren't very, you know, ABC. They're, you know, they're pretty abstract. That one where the you know, the flags went up, that, you know, Penner ended up, the fish, I still can't see what that thing is.
Me neither. That was confusing. And then they give us this little table on purpose, and everything's got to stay on the little table. And I don't know.
Yeah, and it didn't fit. Like, there was like six. There was like six flags, and only three fit on the table. I mean, it was just, that was a real funky one, because Pete's good at puzzles. Pete and RC from Pandang were definitely the puzzle people. I mean, there's that was definitely we all knew that. You know, going in, I thought I could do puzzles. I didn't really step up and say, "Hey, I'm the puzzle guy. Let me do them." But I don't know. You give me a. And I'm good at, like, Sudoku, like the number puzzles. I'm good at, you know, word searches. But these abstract kind of fit things in kind of puzzles, I definitely have to go to work on those babies.
They come up with some incredible ones out there.
Or learning how to untie knots faster.
there was a lot of knots.
Yeah, almost every time there was knots. And that, you know, does it favor small fingers? Sure, you know, because Abby seemed to do real well in those, and Denise seemed to do real well. I mean, Denise pulled ahead of me and Malcolm in that, you know, that final reward challenge where Malcolm won the advantage. We both creamed her to the spot where we had to do knots, and then she ended up the first one out of the knots. So I can only think that those nimble, smaller fingers are an advantage, and it's not too much of a disadvantage. I mean, the only challenge that I thought was unfair is the one that me and Malcolm got stuck in the middle section of, the one that Abby won immunity on. You know, we got stuck.
Yeah, that one had to be tough. I mean,
yeah, it just wasn't big enough. It wasn't big enough.
Yeah.
And they even showed
you
saying, "I'm stuck."
Yeah, we don't want to. You don't want to cry unfair, but I've thought about that with some of those. Unless they were to make each one for each person's body size, it isn't fair.
Yeah, so I said I
got
the camera side afterwards.
Cut your limbs off.
And I said, listen, I am not complaining. I am not crying foul. But I said, you know, and I said, put John Kierhofer in front of this videotape. You know, I'm sure the design of the challenge. You know, some of them favor taller people, some of them favor shorter people, some favor better swimmers, and I get all that. But if I can't fit through the dang hole,
right?
So,
but I always think that on the pole challenges where they make us stand on the little circles and do, you know, who can stand there the longest. And you know, here I am with my size 13 feet, and I look over at this little girl with size 6 feet. I mean, she's got like extra room on hers to move around.
Never,
I can barely bounce.
Never understand those kind of things. They should make the pedestal larger if your feet are larger. It just,
right.
I will never get that.
It is a survivor's unfair.
Scoop, I have to tell you that, you know, we've had Travis Bubba Sampson from Survivor Vanuatu doing our Survivor Reality Roundtables here on our show from the very beginning of this season, and he came on and told us that there were a few people in this season that formed an alliance from the very first day, and he wouldn't tell us who it was, but he told us that they even voted separately, you know, differently in some of the challenge, you know, voting so that it would throw people off, and, you know, we probably wouldn't be able to, you know, pick it out right away. And we were so enthralled in trying to figure out who it was that was teamed up together. He never gave it out. He never let us in on it. You know, he never gave us any clues as to who it was. But we were so enthralled in this season, and Bubba was so entertaining in coming on and talking about Survivor Philippines, and we've had such a great time with him. But he, you know, he knew that you and Lisa had formed this alliance, and he never, you know, told us anything other than there was a few people who, at the very beginning, day one, had formed an alliance, and they had kept it throughout the entire game from day one to the end of the game.
Yeah,
and
it was, Jerry, it was a great teaser that he threw out at us, and I kind of close to the time of the split vote had figured out the lease and scoop and thing, but as soon as we saw the votes go differently between the two of them, that solidified it for me. I go, this is one of them.
Yeah, we weren't sure how many people were in the alliance he was talking about. He didn't give us a lot of clues, but he gave us just enough to really have our interest piqued, and we had such a great season watching this Survivor Philippines season. It was so much fun for us, and we've had so many people joining us in the chat room and listening, you know, to our show, and just listening to Bubba talk about it, and it's just been so much fun watching you guys out there and knowing that this alliance was going on and trying to figure out, you know, early on who it was. And it was so much fun. Bubba really piqued our interest from the very beginning. And
I thought
we were guessing.
Pardon
me?
I thought he was going to be on tonight.
He's got the flu, and he's been sick in bed for days. And he said he might try to call in, but I think he just is so sick that he just left it up to us tonight. And I feel bad because this is our finale show for the season, and I wish we could have, thanked him.
But we'll get
season,
on. I got to run because it's,
yeah,
you know,
we're about to wrap
later,
it up.
But
I just wanted to say thank you for such a wonderful season.
Yeah,
and we would like to have you both back on, maybe with Michelle on Manic Monday show, where we can spend, you know, a day with you on
a day.
Michelle's show. Well, I mean, a show with you where we have you on a show with just yourself. And both you, Mike, and both you, Pete, you know, you can come on. And Cody, we'd like to have you on Michelle's show too. Michelle would like to have each one of you on and on the Manic Monday show. And
who's Michelle? Michelle who?
Michelle Costa from Big Brother 10. She does our Manic Monday show, and she does
Michelle
a great show on
the Manic
Monday show.
Michelle has gone to quite a number of events and charity events and has gotten to know quite a number of people from other reality shows.
She was down in Orlando for the Give the Kids the World event.
She was.
Yeah, she goes to many of the events.
Statistically speaking, make sure that, we will be the first and, you know, a record never to be broken is the only tribe to ever reach tribal council, not only to not have lost a member, but to have gained a member.
Oh.
Wow.
Now, there was another tribe that made it to tribal council made it to the merge without losing a challenge. But
that
right
was
before, the twist was that both tribes had to go to tribal council and send somebody
That
on.
Was me, Michael Scoopin. Michael Scoopin,
okay.
That was me.
I knew.
We had to vote out Willard,
lose?
But, yeah, we never lost. So, yeah, your tribe needs to fight my tribe.
So there it
yeah.
is.
They made
the
it out.
So our tribe and Kobe's tribe made it. Both of us made
there
it without losing, a, without losing a
there,
challenge.
There's season
30
right
without
there.
Losing,
the tribe off.
Yep, without losing a member. So, yeah, they threw that ugly twist in there and made you vote out one of your people anyway.
Yeah. Or little Willard. And then we got Stephanie. But anyway.
We had legends on this show.
There you go. Before you guys leave, we always like to afford the opportunity for our guests to tell us anything they need to promote or anything that they're going to be doing upcoming, because we always like to support you guys. If you have anything to share, now will be the time to speak up.
I would like to promote Pete and Michael Scoopin's pecs, since they are both pretty flawless. One is hairless and one has hair, but I'm in love with both of them. So if anybody would like to support that and send me extra pictures on my Facebook, I will appreciate it.
I love you, Kobe.
Yeah, I'll promote that.
I would say Pete and GQ Magazine. Somebody's got to call GQ Magazine and get him on there. So
there we go. We'll
Pete,
work on that.
I'll give you guys a Tandang secret.
Okay.
RC and Abby used to fight every night for who got to sleep next to Pete. And when I say they fought, they really, really argued and argued and argued. And RC won the first night. So it was Pete, then RC, then Abby, then me, then Lisa, then Artist. And then the next night, Abby won. And the next night, RC won. The next night, Abby won. And Abby never gave up her spot after the fourth night.
And look how that turned out.
So, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. The girl
well, you know what,
you
guys?
Nine.
You know, it looks like the Mayan calendar, we don't have a problem because we're all still here having fun, and look what time it is. So
no,
I think we're all safe.
I got to go icing some cupcakes for my daughter's class tomorrow.
Okay.
I really
so
am.
We,
all right, man.
Thank
all
you
right,
so
let's
much
do it again
for
sometime.
Joining us. I appreciate all
guys.
Of you calling in tonight. This has been a blast. We thank each and every one of you for calling in. I hope all of you have a wonderful holiday, a wonderful Christmas.
You too.
We just appreciate
cool,
all
man.
Of you calling in. It's been a wonderful show. Merry Christmas to all of you, and God bless. Thank you so much. And I'm going to close the show with Ron, as we always do. You guys have a great night, a great Christmas, and let's do this again soon.
All right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Thank
all right,
you.
We'll have you on again soon. Thank you so
right.
much. Good night, everyone.
All right, bye.
All right, bye-bye. I'm going to close the show with Ron, as we always do. Thank you all for supporting our show. Merry Christmas, everyone. We will not have a Manic Monday show because it is Christmas Eve, so we will be back next Thursday with a Reality Roundtable. Merry Christmas, everyone. Here's Ron to close the show.
I want to finish off the show with a little music and say to all of my listeners, thank you guys, and thank you all for coming in.
God bless you, and thank you for listening to the show. And it was a great one.
What a fun show. Merry Christmas, everyone. That was for you. God bless. Be kind to each other. Good night.